Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. The show originally aired on the Premiere Networks on Sunday, December 17th, 2017. Now, a little programming note. You know there's something coming up here. It looks like we're only about a week away from Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve. And so it's going to get a little quiet around here. We're going to do reruns for the radio, so there won't be any new shows. But there will be one new podcast, just one, a best of Tech Guy. So if you don't get a bunch of Tech Guy shows over the next 2 weeks, nothing wrong with your feed, nothing wrong with your podcast client. It's me. It's my fault. I went on vacation and I only left you with one show. Here's the good news. It starts up again January 6th. There'll be a brand new Tech Guy. It'll be right here where you expect it on the feed. So that's why you're only going to get one show over the next 2 weeks. It's the holidays. Have a great holiday. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Happy Hanukkah. Happy Kwanzaa. Enjoy the shortest day of the year, your winter solstice, or if you're in Australia, the longest day of the year. Do they call it their summer solstice? What do they call it? Their summer solstice? Okay. Whatever. I don't know because I'm... What do they call it?
December.
They call it December.
Oh,
they just do it by the month. They don't do because they don't. It's not season, right? It's not seasonal. Do they call it a vernal equinox or autumnal equinox? What do they call it? It's the December solstice. My friends down under, you know what to call it. Just have a great time, and I'll see you next time. This is episode... Boy, I'm sorry we started that. 1,449. Enjoy! The Tech Guy Podcast is brought to you by Texture. Access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your smartphone or tablet. Try it free for 14 days at texture.com/twit. And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/techguy. And by GoToWebinar, a trusted webinar platform with over 55,000 customers who've hosted over 2.7 million interactive web events to connect with their audiences this year. For more, visit GoToWebinar.com/podcast. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. If you want to join the conversation, you can also visit our chat room. Lovely people in there. Lovely. They're at irc.twit.tv. You can go there in your browser, or, and if you have an IRC client, if you're that kind of old worldy, you can you could do it with your IRC client, irc.twit.tv. Nicely moderated. We're in the Twit Live room all hanging out together. You can also visit our website. In fact, all the information you need about the phone number and the IRC channel and questions and answers and all that stuff, where to hear the show, that's all there. TechGuyLabs.com. In fact, you don't really need to write anything down as you're listening to the show. Just enjoy it. Let it wash over you. And then if you hear something you want to know more about or you'd like to make a note of, you don't have to. We've got a guy doing that, James DeRuvo. Hello, James. He's writing it down as we speak at the website, techguylabs.com. So you'll find all the links, everything we talk about there. And it's free. There's no sign up. I don't charge you. It's all wide open like the internet, open and free, like the internet, open and free. You know, it's interesting because people who want to know better, a lot of people want to know better, have been tweeting at me. I've read articles from Fox News and others saying, oh, we don't want any regulation of the internet. We don't want the FCC to get involved. We want no micromanagement of the internet. Let the internet grow and be free as it used to be without interference from the government. And I despair sometimes. I think, how do I explain why that's not right. First of all, the internet was open and free because of protections. First, from the people who developed it, and then later from the FCC. It isn't naturally open and free. And I guess we have to go back a little bit, because maybe I have to explain why we need regulations. And I think there are people, and I understand, say, oh, you know, there should be zero regulations, no government regulations. There's three parties kind of involved here in this. There's businesses. I'm a business owner. I understand how business works. There's government, and there's the people. We the people. We the people. And, you know, in the, I guess, early days of civilization, you probably didn't need a government. You went down to the butcher, and you bought a pound of hamburger, and he'd put a pound of hamburger on the scale, and you'd take it home, and you'd know you had a pound. You go to the gas station, you put a gallon of gas in, you know it'd be a full gallon, right? Because he's not going to cheat you, because you're going to see him at church, you're going to see him around town, he's not going to cheat you. If he puts his thumb on the scale, you're going to catch him and say, hey, knock it off. And if they persist, you're going to go to another butcher, because you have a choice, right? Problem is, if the butcher messes with his scale or the gas station messes with the pump, you might be getting a quarter pound less or a quarter of a gallon less. You wouldn't even maybe know it. What if they just took 10% off? That's a 10% boon for them, 10% more profit for them. And you probably wouldn't notice 0.9 gallons or 0.9 pounds. That's close enough. Most people are pretty honest. You know what? Most people are pretty honest. But there's a few of our friends and neighbors, you know them, with a little larceny in their heart and a chance to make a little bit more. Why not? Who does it hurt? I'll make a little more. Fortunately, you know, I think in a small town, you know, there's enough incentive that people stay pretty honest. They know each other. But as businesses get bigger and they deal with customers that aren't, in fact, in town, they're all over the world, there's less and less incentive, plus more and more pressure on businesses to make an extra buck. They hire CEOs and reward them, not because they're good, upstanding citizens and honest and never put their thumb on the scale. No, quite the contrary. A CEO is rewarded for how much profit they could put in the business. And that's how we want it. We want businesses to try to be successful. You know, investors want that. The board of directors wants that. The CEO wants it more than anyone. So businesses are going to try maybe to put 9/10 of a gallon in your tank. So how do we solve that? Well, we found people we trust to go out, Department of Weights and Measures, and go check that gas pump every once in a while and make sure it's doing a real gallon every time it says so. Or that scale. You know, you've seen the seal on the scale at the butcher shop. Yeah, it's a pound is a pound. Keeps everybody honest. We pick people we trust. If those people become corrupt, we replace them. We get rid of them because this is how it needs to work. That's called regulation. Regulation keeps our water safe. Make sure that you get the amount of gas you promised. Can we agree that we need that in this day and age, in any world where people are just going to always maybe try to make a little extra buck? We need somebody working on our behalf to protect us. Can we agree on that? Well, when it comes to the internet, that's the Federal Communications Commission. We ask them, we depend on them to kind of keep the big internet service providers and the internet companies from putting their thumb on the scale. See, if you're Comcast, for instance, maybe you would sell a internet package that's 20 megabits per second and only give you 10. You might do that. Do you get all the internet your package says you're going to get? Well, and it says there's little words in there, say up to 20 megabits. But do you ever get the 10 or 20 megabits? Up to. That's the FTC, right? The Federal Trade Commission. They regulate advertising. Problem is, much like your gas pump or your scale, it's a black box, there's workings, you don't know what's going on. And internet service providers have strong incentive for a number of reasons to put their thumb on the scale. AT&T, I'll give you an example. When Apple's FaceTime came out, AT&T saw this, and I understand why. Look at their business as a threat to their phone service. They do phone service, and all of a sudden people are going to use our internet service to make phone calls, so they blocked FaceTime. FCC said, you can't block FaceTime, find them, and they stop blocking FaceTime. That's how it should work. That's why government regulation, in some cases, is very useful, because it's a balance. It's a balance between we, the people, who want to get what we pay for, and companies who, and we set it up this way, and it's completely appropriate, try to make as much money as possible. But we need a referee. We need somebody in a striped shirt to say, no, that's not okay. You're not playing by the rules. Now, let's talk about the rules of the internet. Why the internet needs to be open and free. The internet was created so that it didn't matter what those bits that you're getting from your internet service provider carried. It didn't matter. It shouldn't. All bits are created equal. And the internet service provider should not be looking at those bits and say, well, I see from those bits that you're using FaceTime. That competes with my business. I'm not going to let you do that. I'm going to block that bit. Nope, not allowed. There's other ways internet service providers can put their thumb on the scale. They might say, well, I see from those bits that you're watching TV, and I'm Comcast. We would prefer that you use our TV package to watch TV, so I'm going to block those bits. Nope, FCC steps in and says, you can't do that. No, you can't do that. Maybe Comcast, actually AT&T said this, well, we don't like the idea that Google's getting a free ride. We want to charge Google a little toll road between Google and our customers so that Google, we get a little more money from Google. Yeah, customers are paying us, but we can get a little more money, be a little more profitable. I can have a bigger bonus as a CEO if I just take a little money from Google too. Set up what we call a toll road between an information service and a customer. That's illegal also under net neutrality rules. That's what they prevent, that kind of thumb on the scale. Problem is, big business also has such strong incentive to do this. Sometimes they go to the regulators and say, you would be doing me a favor if you would allow me to put my thumb on the scale. I could make a little more. I could give you a little more. Everybody be happy. Those consumers, those people, they won't know that. They'll be happy. Maybe they even buy a lot of ads to convince you you're happy. That's what just happened. There's a thumb on the scale. And this is not what we want. We, the people, have a right to say. We want some rules. We want some referees. That's net neutrality. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Then you get the regulator. Well, this is a problem. The regulators become corrupt, right? So if the guy, the weights and measures guy, is the brother-in-law of the butcher, he might go in that butcher shop and say, yeah, don't worry, Joe. I'm going to make that scale. We'll fix that. You and me. We don't have to tell. Nobody needs to know. What could it hurt? 10% more. Nobody will notice. So you got to watch these regulators. You got to keep an eye on them. And when the regulators come from the internet service providers, you got to keep an extra eye on them. When they're nominated and put in place by legislators who get big packs of money from the internet service provider, you kind of got to, then the referee maybe isn't working to keep it a fair system. That's why it's important, you know, and we got to keep an eye on the regulators because they're doing a job we need them to do, which is to keep it fair. And it's really important for the future of this country that the internet be allowed to be free and open, that bits are bits, that there not be discrimination against bits, because you don't want Comcast, AT&T, and Verizon choosing winners and losers on the internet. You don't want them stopping companies that might be natural competitors like FaceTime or Skype or Netflix. You want them to be a utility providing bits. And by the way, this doesn't have to do with their business model. If they want to, I think they should. I don't know why they don't. If they want to change their business model and charge by the bit, fine. Now, the other thing that's a little off kilter here is, you know, if your butcher's cheating you and you catch him, well, you go to another butcher. The problem is most people can't go to another internet service provider. We don't have the choice in most places. And that's because the FCC put its thumb on the scale way back when the phone company and the cable company got a monopoly. You have only one cable company. You have only one phone company. That's the FCC said, that's okay, guys, because it's so, you know, the cable company, the phone company said, You would be doing us a favor. It's very expensive putting in all those lines. If you want us to develop the phone system in this country or the cable system in this country, you really ought to give us a monopoly. And the FCC did it. They tried to put in rules. You know, your local government decides who the franchisee is, but there's one cable company in almost every place in the city in the country. There's only one phone company. And now that the cable companies and the phone companies are also your internet service provider, that we're seeing the problem. there's no competition. So even if you saw, I'm not getting 20 megabits, what are you going to do? Where are you going to go? Who are you going to complain to? The referees are owned by the cable companies. The monopoly, they have a monopoly. You got no choice. So, at this point, we got to hope that the other referee system, there's a thing called the courts. This is why, by the way, the founding fathers created this system of kind of keeping an eye on each other called checks and balances. And there's really three branches of government, but I'll say there's four because you've got the executive branch, you've got the Congress, the legislative branch, you've got the courts, and the fourth estate, the fourth is the press. And the idea is everybody keeps an eye on everybody else, keep them honest. So it's not over yet. The executive has failed us. The FCC has tilted the playing field very much in the favor of these big internet service providers. But there's still hope because there's the courts and there's the press and maybe even Congress. We'll see. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK. Leo, the phone number. And I should be honest. Let's be honest. Everybody should explain their conflicts of interest. I have a conflict of interest. I want the internet to be open and free because besides doing this radio show, I'm also a podcaster. I make content, TV and radio shows that are distributed not through radio towers or over cable lines, but through the internet. And I'm a little guy. I'm a small guy. I'm not YouTube. I'm not Netflix. But I want to be able to play in this space as a small company. I can't afford to pay an internet service provider for access to you. I have to hope that they're going to keep their lines open and free to all comers, and so that I can compete with Netflix. And frankly, I think we the people want that because that's how you get innovation. That's how you get the next Netflix and the next Google and the next Facebook. What AT&T and Comcast are worried about, it also might be how you get the next AT&T or the next Comcast. They don't like that one bit. So I have a dog in this hunt. I want an open and free internet because that's how I do my business. And I would hope that you would hope to have the same thing too. Kim Schaffer is here. The open and free internet is bringing us phone calls.
For now. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because we don't use a phone system.
No. Nope.
We use a VoIP system to take our phone calls. And it interfaces with the public internet. And then if the internet has to have an interface to the actual phone system. And everybody agrees and does it right. But I don't want to get to the day where, remember the old time, you're probably too young, but the old days when you had an email, like you had an MCI email account or a CompuServe email account, you could only email people on that company's account. There was no interoperability. There's no interoperation. That was pre-internet. That's when you had private internet services or online services. They didn't talk to one another. The internet made it possible for you to email anyone anywhere. The free, remember that? Free and open internet.
I did miss that. My first email was an AOL. So
yeah. Well, even AOL, in the early days, you could only email other AOL customers.
Oh, okay.
And there was a time, and I'm not sure exactly when it was, early 90s, mid-90s, when the internet came along and people like AOL and CompuServe and MCI Mail said, hey, we could use gateways to get out onto the public internet and make our email go everywhere. That was a transformation. People have forgotten that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what net neutrality allows, and
right.
We need that. Anyway, I'm going to stop preaching, and I'm going to let you tell me who to talk to, because you've been getting all these great people on the line here.
Yeah, Brian in Nashville has some photo editing questions, or wants to know the best software, in your opinion.
Oh, one of my favorite topics.
Yes.
Thank you, Kim. And happy holidays
and happy
to you.
Holidays. It's our last show of the year.
Yeah, now don't tell anybody that, because next week we're going to do reruns and the week after, but that's a secret. That's a secret.
No cat's one, out of the bag.
No one need know that. If you haven't heard it, it's new to you.
Yep.
Brian in Nashville. Thank you, Kim. Hi, Brian. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm very well. How are you in Nashville?
I am hanging in like a hair in a biscuit.
Mm-hmm. So I always give you that opportunity, and you always take it, and I'm proud of you, Brian. Proud of you.
Yep. Well, I'm still waiting for you to say, nope, I'm not going there. But you never do.
Why should I deprive you of the joy you get from saying that?
Well, I'm going to have to check with some friends and see if we have one we have an alternate version to
come
that.
Up with some new ones, yeah. Call your friends in Texas. I hear they're very good at making that stuff up.
Yes, they are. Anyway, here about 6 months ago, I got tired of all this internet stuff. I kind of said, you know what, I'll take a break from this, especially Facebook.
Oh, yeah. Facebook's I don't just, blame you.
This is another, I just got so tired.
This is another one. My, a corporation has really kind of gone run roughshod over us now.
And well, you don't realize all the stuff they throw up in front of you does eventually influence you to a degree.
Absolutely. Like, Facebook even just admitted that this weekend. They put out a paper that said, yeah, if you just read Facebook, it'll make you depressed.
Yeah.
They admitted it.
Well, anyway, I went all in. I mean, I got off Facebook. I dropped my Flickr. I mean, I just said, you know what? Let's just take a break. Probably overdid it. I probably should have just did a little research and clean things up and just made things less.
But I'm sympathetic. I am completely sympathetic. I understand.
Anyway, I'm back into some photography, especially birds. And I realized getting back into it after about, actually photography's been a year, I realized my Lightroom was still a version 5. And I also noticed, which I won't ever do again, when I purchased the Lightroom online the last time, I thought you could cancel it at any time, but no, when you ordered it for $9.99 a month, you had to have it for 12 months or they charged you 50%. So it's like, so I'm kind of looking, you know what? I love the Lightroom. I'm familiar with it. I was relatively good at it. It'd probably be the best thing to do, but you know what? Everybody's going to this model of payments per month.
I know. And I think you're not alone. A lot of photographers are saying, wait a minute, we don't want a subscription service. It's gotten worse because Lightroom has moved people into even a different kind of Lightroom. The interface is changing and they want you to store your photos online and, of course, pay them for that privilege. All of this is upsetting photographers. So they are doing what you're doing. Many of us are doing what you're doing, looking for a standalone, non-subscription alternative to Lightroom. And I'll say first and foremost, probably nothing better than Lightroom. They still offer Lightroom Classic, which is the old form of Lightroom. But you still have to pay a subscription fee. And I also think Lightroom really needed to be updated. It was getting a little slow. It was getting really slow. So they kind of have us over a barrel. So let's look for something new. And there are a lot, frankly, there are now a lot of good choices out there. There's two parts to Lightroom that are important. There's the DAM part. That's what photographers call it. They're not swearing. It's Digital Asset Management, DAM. That's the idea that you import all your photos in there. You grade them. You eliminate the ones you don't want. You know, it's a photo organization and searching tool. And that's very useful. That's a big part of
it. Yeah, that's workflow. That's your workflow. Standard workflow.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's the photo editing part that lets you take a photo and make it look good and process it, crop it, do whatever you need to do to make that photo shine. So those are two different things. There are a number of companies coming along who are working on replacing Lightroom. The two that I'm thinking of don't yet have that DAM part down, unfortunately. Are you Windows or Mac? Because there are different recommendations for different platforms.
Oh, I'm all in on Mac.
Okay. So there's a company called Serif. They've been around a long time. And Serif makes a really fabulous photo editor. But it doesn't yet have, and they promised that this year, well, next year, 2018, they will have a DAM part that goes along with their Affinity photo. So I would Serif's Affinity is a lot like, I would say a lot like Photoshop, more like Photoshop than Lightroom, but a very good program. There's another company that I would pay attention to. They used to be called Mac Fun, but they're doing Windows products now, so they had to change their name to Skylum, Skylum. They also have a superb editor called Luminar. They also have an HDR program called Aurora. They have a black and white program called Tonality Pro. All of these are excellent. They're missing the DAM part as well. They say they will have it in 2018. So those two are my favorites right now. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. There's also, you know, the opportunity to use a different program as a DAM program. I use Photo Mechanic, for instance. Perhaps you're familiar with that. That's Windows and Mac. I use that because Lightroom was getting so slow on my raw images that I just couldn't keep – it was just – I couldn't keep using it. So I use Photo Mechanic to import and arrange my photos. pick the ones I want to edit and then export them out to, well, Lightroom or Luminar or Affinity.
Yeah, I have Luminar, and I've been trying it, but the one thing I don't like about it is the nice thing about Lightroom is you can pick an entire folder or a whole set of images, work on them one at a time, and then be done. Luminar, you either have to do one at a time or you have to do batch on everything. So I didn't find any easy way.
Well, that's
an example.
That's an example of not having a DAM, because if they eventually got a DAM, you would then say, okay, now I'm going to rate these photos. Now send this to the editor as a batch, and that's why Lightroom could do that, because it's got the organizational tool, and then you pick the ones you want to batch edit. But right now, Luminar is missing that tool, and I presume. Yeah. I would expect that the DAM tool will do that. Photo Mechanic does do that. So what you do is I import all my – and this is what I end up using as a workflow until we get the digital asset management part for these other programs. I use Photo Mechanic to import everything and then use, very similar to Lightroom, the scoring method. In fact, you can modify a Photo Mechanic. So you just press 1, 2, 3, or 4, or 5 to grade a photo. And then you can filter it down to the best photos, the top – number five star photos, for instance, and say export to Lightroom and edit them, or export to Luminar and batch edit them. So, but I agree with you. They have a way to go. They're not Lightroom yet. I mean, I've tried a lot of stuff. Nothing's Lightroom yet. There's a Pixelmator Pro, which is very good, the new Pro version, but that's really more a Photoshop replacement, although at, I think, $70, a very good Photoshop replacement. It has layers. It has channels. So I think that I think we're just waiting. I think there's a mad scramble. Both Skylum and Serif see this opportunity and say, we're going to take over. This is our chance to beat Adobe. So I suspect on the Mac side, those are going to be the two to use. But again, you're right.
Yeah, I'm wondering if I bought Affinity Photo now for desktop. It looks like, I wonder if there's a,
have you used Affinity?
I've never used Affinity. Again, the big thing is not so much batch processing. The issue I was having that I couldn't do, unless I'm missing something, and I even bought the $19 Luminar video that goes with it for training. It's not so much batch. It's with Lightroom, when I pick all the images I want to look at, I've already selected them and imported them, and now I'm looking at them one at a time and working on them. You can't do that with Luminar.
Yeah.
Batch just means you're applying one thing to all of them. No, I want to look at them one at a time.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you. Say, I know exactly
what
you're
like
saying.
That. I don't like that.
So, if for instance, you shoot, you do a whole shoot where the white balance is off, you would want to be able to say, take this white balance and apply it to these 400 pictures from that shoot. I do that all the time in Lightroom. That's a very handy tool. I presume that's what you're talking about. Of course, pros now. Arl is telling me, and I agree with him, or her. That Capture One is that's a more pro product. It's also a more expensive product. And frankly, I find it very challenging to use. It's got a steep learning curve. But that was developed by Phase One for their high-end medium format cameras. But you can use it with other. Sony, for instance, gives you a free license for Capture One just with the Sony. And that's how I've used it. That might be another one to look at. It's really,
right.
It's a pro product, but it's expensive. I guess they have a trial. Yeah, they do have a free trial. So
yeah, it doesn't look like Affinity has a trial.
That's a problem. I guess they're so inexpensive, they figure, well, you should just buy it.
Nope, free trial. Just found it.
Oh, good. Hey, I got to run.
Thank you.
Thank you. I need to talk about texture. Texture, by the way, I don't have my iPad right in front of me, but let me tell you, this is what the iPad was made for. In fact, Apple, I think, made Texture one of their apps of the year last year. Because what it does is it gives you access to more than 200 of the best magazines for a very, very low price. Less than the cost of a couple of subscriptions. Go to texture.com/twit and take a look at all the magazines. You like cooking? Bon Appetit and Real Simple. You like photography? Shutterbug, National Geographic. And oh, by the way, photography looks better on your iPad than it does on the printed page. They don't have to screen it. So you're going to get all the detail. You can zoom in on the pictures. It's easy to read. You get all the pages that are on the newsstand issue, plus back issues, plus bonus features that aren't in the magazines, like video. I love the curation Texture does, too. There's always a great article to read. And if there's a category you're interested in, you can go to Texture, what's new and noteworthy, and find something you're interested in. They even have collections of magazine articles from a variety of magazines, many you've probably never heard of. It really broadens your reach. When the winter hits, you can look at Afar, Airbnb, Condé Nast Traveler, and dream about where you're going to want to go. If you like those debates, those political debates, The Atlantic, the Time Magazine, if you like Hollywood Gossip, Entertainment Weekly, People, Us, it's all there, 200 premium magazines. Now I'm going to tell you the price, because we have a special price. Just to start your free Texture trial, go to texture.com/twit. And if you decide to continue, we have a special 30% reduced price, $9.99 a month for 200 plus magazines. No more cluttered coffee tables. No more guilt. I always had a guilt because I have a stack of New Yorkers and I feel like, well, I have to read the old ones before I'm going to read the new one. It doesn't happen with Texture. Any article I'm interested in the New Yorker, I just go and I read it with I read the cartoons first. It's okay. Texture makes it okay. Texture.com/twit, $9.99 a month. That's over 30% off their listed price, but you can try it free right now. Also, by the way, great gift options. And as we get closer and closer to the holidays, if you forgot that 8th Hanukkah gift or you got Christmas next week and you're worried, you can go to texture.com/twit right now, get a gift certificate, start the subscription as a holiday gift. I mean, they will love it. Texture.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support of the Tech Guy Podcast. It is a really interesting challenge and a really great opportunity for these image companies. The problem is that Adobe's been making Lightroom and Photoshop for 20 years, maybe 25. Didn't they just have their 25th anniversary of Photoshop? I think they did. And so it's really evolved with the input of professional photographers very nicely over the years. And it's this last step that professionals have went, oh, I don't know if I want to take that next step, which is to trust all my photos to the Adobe Cloud and to pay the subscription. And I can understand why they don't want to. The problem is that these competitors, and they see a huge opportunity from companies like Skylum and Serif, you know, they don't have the 25 years of working with pros. They really both came from a more consumer-ended product. Ironically, I think Adobe is moving Lightroom more towards the consumer end. There's more money to be made. You'd rather sell a million copies of something at $49 or $99 than than sell 100,000 or even 1,000 at $200 or $300. So I have a feeling that they're moving more towards the consumer too, which is too bad. The pros are still looking for something. The company that makes the Phase One camera makes a program called Capture One. I've had a hard time getting used to it, to be honest. It has a Mac and Windows version as well. You can try it for free. And if you have a Sony camera, at least the higher-end Sonys, you get a free license to use it only with your Sony. That's the way I've... No, I bought Capture One. There are a lot of... every photographer has their own way of working, right? There are a lot of choices here. I don't know if there's yet a replacement, let's say, for Adobe, Photoshop, and Lightroom. There are definitely contenders, and they're working hard. And I think over time, we're going to see better and better versions of these programs. But I agree with Brian. I don't think we're quite there yet. I'm right in the middle. I don't know what to do at this point, honestly. I really like Luminar, the Skylum product. I like Skylum's plugins. It's a tough thing, though, to abandon Photoshop. I've been struggling with it. I bet you a lot of professionals and serious amateurs. I'm not a professional. I'm a serious amateur. But I think a lot of serious amateurs are struggling with this as well. What do you use instead? I'm wondering if the open source community is going to come up with something. There are some choices out there in the open source community. They're quite good, but not yet maybe ready for prime time. 8888 Ask Leo, back to the phones. Joe in Kankakee, Illinois. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. You know how I know how to pronounce Kankakee?
I've been riding. Leo.
I've been riding on the city of New Orleans.
Well, there you go.
It's a train town, Kankakee.
Yes. What a pleasure to talk to you. I remember watching you guys on Tech TV, and it is a pleasure when I commute to Chicago every day to listen to your podcast
and
all your shows. So
thank
it's
you
a pleasure.
So much.
Well, I purchased the Harman Kardon Invoke.
Yes.
Based on listening to you, you had an unboxing on your shows and talked about it, and Microsoft had a good price on it during the holidays.
They dropped it in half. They cut it in half to $100.
Yeah, I couldn't pass it up.
I know. That makes it desirable. Yeah, what do you think?
Well, it's very good. I like it, but I have a problem. Every time I want to stream from my phone, now I've paired my phone to the Invoke, but I can't figure out how to command. I don't know if it's a command or what it is to get it to play the streaming audio to the Invoke without having to repair it.
Well, that doesn't sound right. So you give the command pair to phone and then and each time?
Yes, and that's the only way I can get it to play. You know, so I've paired it to my phone. And I can play music from my phone, which is what I want to do sometimes. And
yeah, it can be used. In other words, use it as a Bluetooth speaker. And because it's made by a Harman Kardon, a good speaker company, it actually is a very good speaker, especially for $100. For $100.
Yeah, I'm sure it's just a command or something. But I've looked on the help files. I can't really find what command I'm missing there that I need to do to tell it to play audio from my phone.
Well, I'm sorry to say that after I unboxed it and showed it and played with it for a while, I unplugged it. I haven't used it since. So I have not become, as I should have, an Invoke expert. And now that it's $100, I think I probably should. I know with the Amazon Echo, you could tell it to search for phone or connect to phone. And then on the phone, you'll see the Echo and you just tap it and it's paired. Is that the same experience you're having with the Invoke?
You know, I haven't looked back at the phone to see if it's still paired.
That's what I would do. I would do what you want. So what you want to do is you want to put the Invoke or any Bluetooth speaker in a mode where it's aware of Bluetooth devices. You've already paired it with the phone. So there is an entry in your phone's Bluetooth listing that says Invoke. Ideally, this is a problem probably more with Bluetooth than anything else. Ideally, what you should be able to do is just go to your phone, open your Bluetooth settings, tap Invoke, and it would pair. But I'm betting, because I know this is true for Amazon's devices, that you have to tell the Invoke, hey, get ready, because I'm going to pair to you. So on Amazon's Echo, you say connect to phone, and it goes searching. And then you go into your phone, and you tap that entry, and it goes, oh, there you are. It's not exactly repairing, but it's very close. And it's a pain in the butt, and I agree with you. It just should stay paired. But my sense is this is a limitation of Bluetooth, not of the Invoke.
Okay, well, I'll give it a shot.
Give that a shot.
Hey,
yeah.
I appreciate your show. You what a great network. What a great find to find you after a few years where I've missed you from the TV. And so I'm streaming you on Roku, watching your shows, and it's great to see you.
Oh, I'm so thrilled, Joel. Thank you so much for those kind words. I appreciate it. Happy holidays.
Thank you. You too now.
Thank you. Yeah, I think Bluetooth is really a technology that is not quite easy to use yet. And there have been movements in the right direction. For instance, Bluetooth Low Energy, Bluetooth LE. And if you've ever used a Bluetooth LE device, this whole pairing thing goes away. Two devices, your phone, for instance, and a speaker, or a phone and a thermometer. I have a meat thermometer that uses it, Bluetooth LE, will... You just see each other. You don't have to go any active pairing. You'll just see each other and they'll kind of connect. And that's really how it should be. Why we don't see more of that, I'm not sure. I'm really not sure. I haven't used this Invoke long enough to have, you know, tried some of these more advanced things. The Invoke is very much like the Echo. Even looks kind of like an Echo. It's a black cylinder. I think they have silver as well. But it has a good speaker in it, and the speech assistant is Cortana, which is Microsoft's speech assistant. Cortana is an interesting thing. It's, I would say, better than Siri, Apple's speech assistant. Not quite up there with Google, and because it's Microsoft and not Amazon, it doesn't have many of the features of Amazon Echo. You know, one of the Echo is not the smartest speech assistant in the world, but because it ties to Amazon services and because there are now, I just saw the latest count. There's 75,000 skills, third-party skills written for the Echo, more than any other speech assistant. It's still the leader. It's been out the longest and it's still the leader. I hope, you know, I feel like the fact that they're cutting the price of this Invoke in half tells me this is it. This is the one and only Cortana device, Cortana speaker besides your phone or your computer, your Windows 10 computer. And that's kind of too bad. Competition is good for all of this stuff. But it's going to end up coming down to Amazon and Google, I really think. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, the GIMP is really more a replacement for Photoshop in my estimation. I have been using quite a nice open source photo editor called Darktable that is seems to be aiming to a one-to-one feature competitor for Lightroom. Like they're trying to do Lightroom, basically. And I like Darktable pretty well. The big problem, and I don't know if open source can solve this or not, is the RAW engine. So the real key to all of this is the RAW engine. Adobe Camera Raw. Apple has its own RAW engine. And what it is a renderer. It takes the RAW photo off of your camera. If you use RAW, if you use JPEG, Darktable's great. And really, you have many, many more choices. But if you want to shoot RAW, Camera Raw is when you take a picture and the file contains all the data, unprocessed, just all the data. Now, the camera itself will create, in order to put it on the LCD screen, a JPEG thumbnail of it. And when you import it, many programs will use that JPEG thumbnail. Many cameras will even save a JPEG sidecar. You might shoot RAW plus JPEG. But ultimately, for the best photo editing results, you're going to want to edit RAW. So what Adobe does and Apple does is they have a RAW renderer that takes the RAW file and turns it into a JPEG, which you then edit and apply those edits to the RAW. The quality of the RAW renderer is a big deal for photographers. And so if you're using Apple Photos, you're using Apple's Camera Raw. If you're using Photoshop or Lightroom, you're using Adobe Camera Raw. I think most pros like Adobe Camera Raw and feel it does the best job of rendering the RAW files. And you have to have a render. If you saw the RAW data, it wouldn't even be in color. It would be weird. So you need it to be rendered. And of course, the camera companies provide photo apps. Canon and Nikon both do that. Sony, I think, I can't remember if Sony has their own. Yeah, they do. And then they give you Capture One if you want to do it high end. And so Capture One has its own renderer. People who talk about renderers, you know, have favorites. It's kind of like talking about film, you know, like, I really like Velvia when I'm shooting black and white, that kind of thing. So that's a whole separate area. And really, Lightroom is basically a bunch of scripts on top of Camera Raw. That's really what Lightroom is. They wrote a bunch of Lua scripts on top of Camera Raw. And it's one of the reasons it's gotten clunky and old and slow is because it hasn't evolved very well. So I just don't know. I'm not enough of a pro. This would be a good conversation to have about what Camera Raws are best and whether even more. It is like film, like this Camera Raw, you know, Capture One does the best with skin tones, that kind of thing. Plugging in the Invoke. So I think it's very analogous to that debate over film. And I'm not expert enough to have an opinion. I just use Adobe Camera Raw. I think Apple's fine. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. Give me a ring. We have some lines open. It's getting close to the holiday season. Ooh, do you hear that? That's my Harman Kardon Invoke speaker waking up and smelling the coffee. Hello, Invoke. So I guess I could... Let's see. Oh, there's a Bluetooth button on the back. You know, it might be that if you, for our last caller, if you press the Bluetooth button, that puts it in pairing mode. Yeah, it does. And then you just look for the entry on your phone, and that's probably the process. And that's, I have to say, that is kind of classic Bluetooth, right? You got to kind of go through these steps to get a speaker paired up. I'm betting that's what you do. Yeah, I see it's doing that Bluetooth thing on the top of it. It is one of the things the Invoke does that is less than useful is you can tap the top of it, and it will give you a random fact. Less than useful, I think. Line three. Well, I'm sure you're going to hear it because at some point it's going to say hello and give me a random fact. Carl in Upland, California. Hi, Carl.
Leo, how are you, sir?
I am well. How are you?
Doing pretty well, but I'm going to have cardiac arrest if you can't help me out.
So oh, well, okay, I'm getting the paddles out. What can I do?
Okay, I have an older Toshiba PC that we're working in XP, and it was just wonderful. I held off downloading Windows 10 for quite a while, but you were pretty enthusiastic about it initially. So I downloaded the Windows 10. And it was a seamless download. Everything was perfect.
Good.
All my documents, I was able to transfer them over the whole works. I have another PC that I downloaded Windows 10 onto. And I made flash drive backups of all the information.
Good man.
When
when
I want to transfer the information to this other PC that also has a newly downloaded Windows 10, it doesn't transfer.
What happens?
When I open up the files... the first 50 or 60 lines look almost like they're done in the Russian alphabet, literally.
Okay.
It looks like code, and then beneath that, I'll have the basic information I need. In this case, that's a telephone list, but all the languages run together, like four or five paragraphs.
Yeah. Those are what we call they're not text files; they're binary files, not human readable. In other words. So what did you create?
Not to interrupt you, but what I did, because I made two backup flash drives, I thought, well, maybe it's a formatting issue. So I reformatted one.
Oh, boy.
Did the information on the first again, transfer it, and did the same problem.
Yeah. So what did you create those files with initially?
Windows. It was Windows.
Contact Manager.
Word.
Probably they're in Word?
Yeah, they're in Word.
So, okay. So it's not that the file didn't come over.
Again, it's from Microsoft Office in Microsoft 2.10. I continue to use the 2.10 because I don't need the.
You're trying to open a file that was created not as a text file, but created as a document file by Microsoft Word. It sounds like.
Correct.
Yeah, and you need to open it with Word on the other end, and it should. Render when you say you're opening it, you're getting, instead of what you expect, the normal document file, you're getting all that garbage in there. What's happening, you're right, normally what happens is Word goes, oh yeah, this is my file and this is a format I understand, and I'm going to open it and I'm going to take that Cyrillic and use that to tell me what fonts I'm using and how big they are and what's bold and what's not. That's all formatting information. Sorry about that loud noise. That's the Invoke deciding to wake up. So what we have to solve is, why is it that this on this other computer, when it's looking at the file, it's not understanding that it's a normal Microsoft Word file? Is the file complete with the three-letter extension, the .doc extension at the end of it?
When I transfer it over, do you mean?
Yeah, because the extension is what usually Word uses to see if it understands that file. Are they .doc files?
Yeah, I've got it.
Or .docx?
No. Let me take a look.
It's the same version of Word on both. You're using 2010 on both, right?
Yes. Yeah. Exactly the same version.
Yep. You may have it hidden. The extensions often are hidden in the file explorers. You might have to turn on.
Yeah, I've got the actual document open, and I don't see it anywhere here.
Yeah. So for some reason, the word on your new system is not understanding that that file is its own document format, a docx format. So it's getting it is possible that the file is getting corrupted in the transfer, but I don't think so. I think it's how are you copying it over to this flash drive? You're just dragging it over?
Yes.
Okay. A couple of things you might want to try is instead of dragging it over, use Word's built-in backup solution to back up that document folder and then restore it in the new computer with the Word, with the Windows built-in backup solution and just see if that preserves. There's something getting corrupted in the transfers, some bit that's getting unsaid, or it thinks your new computer thinks it's a plain TXT file, and that's why it's rendering it that way, when instead it should say, no, this is a docx file. I understand how to display that. So my guess is in the copying process, something's been changed. Not sure exactly what. So try using, if you hit the Windows key, what version of Windows are you using on the old system? Is it XP, did you say?
Well, it was. No, I upgraded that one to Windows 10.
Okay. So you're copying from Windows 10 to Windows 10.
Exactly.
Okay, good. So that's good. So Windows 10, when you hit the Windows key and type the word backup, you're going to get their Windows backup solution. Try using that to back up the folder where your documents are. You might even just do a one test folder and then copy that backup file over. Instead of all the individual files, copy that backup file over to the USB drive, move it over to the new computer, restore it. Same thing, hit Windows key, type restore, restore it in Windows 10 restore, and see if that preserves it. By doing that, you're going to preserve any information that's associated with the file that helps Windows, Microsoft Word understand what that file is. You need Word to understand that that is a docx file, not a text file.
Okay, and I should do that on the laptop that I'm actually going to create the flash drive backup on, correct?
Yeah, I mean, you've got two machines, both Windows 10. You want to copy the Word files from one machine to the other, correct?
Yes.
Yes. On machine one, the old machine, use Windows backup to back up the folder containing all your documents files.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
That's yes.
Windows comes with a backup program to do that. That will create a single file, a Windows backup file, and that's the file you put on the flash drive. Unplug it from the original machine, plug it into the new machine, and the only problem with doing that is you have to now use Windows backup to restore it as a folder that contains docx files. You probably can double-click it. In fact, I'm sure you can. When you stick in the flash drive, it'll open up on your desktop. Double-click that backup file. Windows Backup will launch and say, where would you like me to restore these files? You restore it to a folder, My Word Files, and they should then open just fine.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
I will give it a try, sir.
So do you understand the problem is that somehow some information that is in that file that tells Word, oh, this is one of your files. This is a docx file. You need to open this as a docx file, not as a text file, is missing somehow. It's a bit that's missing, maybe a secondary file that's missing. I think that somehow that didn't get copied over properly. Backup should do it right.
Okay. Thank you again. I guess I don't have to go through the cardiac arrest.
Please. No cardiac arrest here. We can't afford to lose any listeners. We need every one of you. I hope that works. And if it doesn't, call me back and we'll fix it.
I will. I listen to you so religiously. Thank you again.
Thank you.
I appreciate your time.
Yeah. As long as you're using the same version of Word on both sides, and as long as that document's not modified, it should open just fine. So I'm presuming you're using Microsoft Office 2010 and the same version of Word. Not WordPad, remember. Not especially not Notepad. If you open a document file from Microsoft Word in Notepad, you'll see what he's talking about. The gibberish at the beginning. That's formatting information. It's not human readable. It's not text, actually. It's the Notepad is trying to render it as text, but it's not text. It's binary data. That's just designed for Word to read. And Word reads it and goes, okay, you're going to use this font. You're going to put it this way. You're going to have this margins. It's formatting information. That's why it's at the beginning. And there'll be continued formatting information through the document. Okay, make this bold. And Word won't show any of that because it's going to use that as rendering information. It knows what's text. It knows what's rendering information. It will just show you the text appropriately rendered. But if Word doesn't understand that file, I can't read this. It's just going to say, well, must be text. And that's when you get all the gibberish. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls right after this. Our show today brought to you by those folks at Rocket Mortgage, Quicken Loans. I love Quicken Loans. In fact, I was talking to somebody yesterday. A fan was in the studio. He said, I'd heard your ads, and I decided to try Rocket Mortgage. They were great. I got a better loan at a better rate than I would have gotten from the big bank. In fact, he tried several lenders. And that I encourage you to do that. Compare the rates. It was easier. I couldn't believe how easy it was. First of all, Quicken Loans. Let's just talk about them. They're the lender. Second biggest lender in the country. But also, I think the smartest, the most savvy, the most technological, the most forward-thinking, the most customer-centric. They really are a great lender. They're revitalizing downtown Detroit. I mean, they're just turning it around down there. Really great up there, I guess it is. Really great company. And they realized that the loan approval process really was kind of stuck in the 19th century. You know, you go somewhere, you go to a bank and you say, please, sir, can I have a loan? And, well, how much money do you have for a down payment? Well, what rate, you know, I'll find a rate for you and do the calculation. Wouldn't it be nice if you could just do that online? Yes, you can. Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage just for that reason alone. Rocketmortgage.com/tech guy if you want to check it out. You go there, you could do it on your phone. I mean, anywhere there's a browser, but even your phone, and the reason you can do it on your phone is there's just a couple of questions you answer. You say, yeah, I want a loan. You give it some information, you know, your birth date, your address, that kind of stuff. They do the credit check for you. They have partnerships with all the banks and everything. So you do not have to go to your bank and say, I need my statements from the last 5 years. You don't have to get your pay stubs or anything. They get it all. With your permission, of course, they get it all. They crunch the numbers. I mean, here, like 30 seconds have gone by. Within a few minutes, based on income, assets, and credits, they're going to say, okay, here's the loans that you qualify for. What's your down payment? What interest rate are you looking for? What term? Boom. Bada bing, bada boom. A couple of minutes later, you are approved for a home loan. That is such a revolution. And if you've never bought a home before, you don't know. But if you have, you do know how much better that is. If this is your first home or your 10th, this is the way to go. And by the way, a lot of people are refinancing. Actually, this guy we were talking to yesterday did a refi. You can do a refi too. The interest rates are going up. They already have gone up a little bit at the Fed. The Fed has said we're going to raise them 3 more times this year. It is time to go to rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. Lock in those low interest rates. At least sign up for the account and find out, right? No obligation. RocketMortgage.com/tech guy. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org number 3030. That's RocketMortgage.com/tech guy from Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently. They really do it right. And as a geek, I appreciate it. I don't want to go to a bank. I want to do it on my phone. RocketMortgage.com/tech guy. We thank them so much for their support of the Tech Guy podcast. WordPad shouldn't have problems, although, I mean, but Windows 10, it's going to be compatible with DocX. I'm not sure what's going on there. But
love the holidays. A great time of year.
DocX is a tough format. I think it is the default format for Word 2010. Yeah. It's the default file extension. So I remember DocX was a mess, and I'm trying to remember. It might even have had a secondary file associated with it. It was basically XML, right, or something. You got to make sure it says DocX, not Doc. That could confuse Word. And I'm going to give you, let me put this in the show notes. Here's a website called Word Tips. And James, you can put that in the show notes. This is kind of what to do if you run up against a corrupted Word document or, you know, something weird's going on with the Word file. This has a lot of additional information that might be helpful to him. I'm just going to assume that however he was copying it over, it wasn't copying properly. I am not going to have him install OpenOffice. He's got Word. He's got Office 2010. I don't think that's the problem. It's really, and this is actually a little tip from the tech guy, having done this for 25 years now. It's very tempting to start going off in space with lots of solutions. You know, you can give somebody 20 solutions for any one thing. And often I do overdo it. Ideally, you would give them one simple thing that would work and not include all the alternatives. I know as a chat room, often the chat room, you know, your job is to come up with all the possible alternatives. But, you know, yeah, use Edlin. install Linux and use LibreOffice. And, yeah, I mean, those are all not wrong, but they're not really going to – I'm trying to give him one thing that will fix it. And really, I have to read between the lines, right? That's part of the job is kind of figuring out, well, what's he not telling me? What's he doing that he's not telling me? And I think – yeah, keep it simple, logical, follow the path. I think you're right, Chumley. Now, I admit I'm often fail at that, but that's the goal.
National Maple Syrup Day. It takes 40 gallons of sap to make 1 gallon of maple syrup.
And I'm just the sap to do it. So every time you tap the invoke, it gives you a new fact.
Here's an olfactory factoid. Humans can detect the smell of a skunk up to a mile away. Wow. That's some long-distance skunk funk.
I feel like this is designed to make you feel good about Cortana, but it just makes me want to punch her in the nose.
Here's an interesting little piece of innovation history. The flute and the sewing needle were both invented before the wheel.
Now, the caller said he had Office 2010 installed on both. You know what? Here's a between-the-lines guess. Might not be right, that he didn't actually install Office 2010 on the new machine, that he just dragged the Office files over. And if that's the case, of course, what's not been done is the file association database hasn't been updated with DocX. So if I'd really thought about it longer, and I don't have enough time to do this, maybe the answer would be certainly this would have been a question I should have asked him. On your new machine, did you actually use the Office 2010 installer to install Word? Because if he didn't, then the file association's broken. So there's a lot of things that would solve it, but I'm not going to tell him to install OpenOffice. Sorry. thought about it a little longer, I probably would have said, now, one thing you want to make sure to do on the new machine is full install of Office 2010. You can't just copy the Word program over. You have to install it. Yeah, I suppose it's possible the macros are blocked. The macros are normally blocked by default. I don't think that's it. Thinking about it, I'm going to guess that really is the problem. That would produce those results, right? If you didn't, and in fact, my solution won't work for him because he still doesn't have an Office 2010 install on the new machine. So when he double clicks that DocX file, it's going to go, I don't know what this is. Might not even be opening Word. It might be opening Notepad or something. It could be a damaged normal.dot file. That's right. But all of that would be fixed if you installed Office on the new machine using the installer. So let's add that, James, as well. I don't remember the guy's name. I'm sorry, James, but let's add that as well. Step one, just to be sure, make sure you have fully installed Microsoft Office 2010, the same version that you have on the old machine on the new machine. Yeah, I don't know, Lawn Dog, maybe. Depends. You know, if you have Office 365, no. I guess he doesn't because he has 2010, right? Yeah, and it could be damaged files, but if they're just being, and so that was what I was presuming, is somehow the files were damaged, and Windows backup would prevent that. It would probably do it right. Yeah, it might be like exactly, Uncle Bick. If the file association is broken, it might be he might think it's opening Word, but it's not. It's opening something that's not Word. like right. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo, that's my phone number. Give me a ring. We can talk high tech as we, you know, enter the holiday season. I know a lot of you are doing some shopping, Hanukkah or Christmas gifts you need to get, Kwanzaa gifts, gifts for yourself too. You know, I think that's a Druid tradition on winter solstice. Give yourself something nice. I'm going to make that up and say it's true. If you have a question about something you want to get or some help with something you already have, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. My friend Nick Bilton, who is a former Times journalist, he's now a screenwriter, big shot. He went to work for Vanity Fair, and he's written a number of books, Becoming Twitter, Hatching Twitter? His story of the founding of Twitter, and his most recent book about the Silk Road. And Ross Ulrich, the guy who created a black market using Bitcoin and then was later arrested. So he's kind of an expert on Bitcoin as well as Nick. In fact, I think he's writing the screenplay right now for Silk Road movie. Nick tweeted yesterday something that just, you know, anybody like me who's been watching this tech industry long enough, I started writing about technology in the late 70s. And any tech journalist has had an opportunity here or there to, you know, oh, man, if I'd bought Apple stock in 1978, it'd be worth something today. Or, and I can go on and on and on. This is a very common thing. And fortunately, from day one, or unfortunately, recused myself from buying tech stocks because I felt like, well, I want to be fair. I don't want to have a stake in the action. And if I'm going to be, you know, a reliable reporter and reviewer on tech subjects, I can't buy tech stocks. So I stuck with mutual funds. My mistake. although, you know, the stock market's been is up quite a bit since 1977. Nick points out that if you had bought $1 worth of Bitcoin, $1, if you had just on a whim in March 2010, almost 8 years ago, if you had just bought a dollar's worth of Bitcoin, today it would be worth $6.2 million. I think that's even better than Apple stock. $1 of Bitcoin purchased in March 2010 would be worth $6.2 million today. Another lost opportunity. The problem is, of course, how did you know to do that? Some people did. There's a guy, we don't know who it is, named Pine. That's his pseudonym. He probably rightly so doesn't want people to know his real name. But Pine was an early Bitcoin investor, apparently. And he has some money. As anybody who bought Bitcoin in those days would have some money, just because he bought it. Pine has already been giving away millions. He's become a Bitcoin philanthropist, just set up something he calls the Pineapple Fund. He gave the Pineapple Fund a little more than 5,000 Bitcoin. That's currently $86 million. It's all going to charity. I think that's amazing. But it's also just darn luck, right? It's just being at the right place at the right time. And, you know, I have a friend who, when he first learned about Bitcoin, thought, well, it's one of the things about Bitcoin is you can make Bitcoin. You don't you mine it, but I'm going to put the mine in quotes because you don't need a pickaxe and a light in your helmet to go down in the mines. You just set up a computer to solve some mathematical problems running the software Bitcoin provides, and it spits out coins. Now, it's really hard to do it these days. Bitcoin's set up to make it harder and harder and harder. And at this point, it costs so much in electricity to mine Bitcoin that it's only economical for people who get their electricity almost for free. That's why most of the Bitcoin miners these days are in China. They live next to hydroelectric power dams, you know, where their power is cheap or free. My guess is it's not just in China. They're probably the Chinese government or Chinese military doing it, getting free power from their hydroelectric facility. So most people aren't Bitcoining mining in the United States anymore. Electricity is just too expensive here. I had a friend who did it in Arizona. It was pretty cheap in Arizona. But even I doubt that he's still doing it because it's too expensive. In any event, this friend Steve, you probably heard him on the show from time to time. He's my security guru, Steve Gibson. He was learning about Bitcoin. He set up a little Bitcoin miner, just a cheap PC in the corner. Next morning, gets up, 50 Bitcoin. Just popped out of it. Free, nothing, cost him nothing. It was an old computer. 50 Bitcoin. Close to $1 million worth of Bitcoin. Like that. Just like that. The really sad thing is, Steve, it's just sitting in the corner. He hasn't ever done anything with it. The wallet that the Bitcoin's stored in, it's a digital wallet, is on a hard drive in the corner. He said, well, you know, I don't know. Last time I checked it, the drive wasn't working. It's kind of ironic because Steve writes a program, a very famous program called SpinRite, that recovers damaged hard drives. He said, I don't know. Should I run it on this hard drive? I don't know. Steve, it's like $800,000 in your corner, and you're going, I don't know. Should I open up the box? Should I look and see it's in there? The part of the problem, see, it's easy to say now, in 2010, if you'd bought this, you'd be rich. But part of the problem, with stocks, it's the same thing. You got to know ahead of time. If you're Marty McFly coming back from the future, you could easily say, well, come back to 2010. Set my time machine for March 2010. I'm going to buy 100 Bitcoin. Set my time machine now for December 2017. I got almost $1 billion. I retire. I spent $100 to make $620 million. I'm going to retire. That's why we need time machines, though, because without a time machine, did you know? It's like the guy who spent 10,000 Bitcoin to buy two pizzas. At the time, it was a pretty good deal. Had he known that in 2017, those 10,000 Bitcoin would be worth hundreds of millions of dollars, you might have thought twice about it. That's a very expensive pizza, but at the time it didn't make any sense. And then the question is, and I think this is why my friend Steve isn't really hurrying to open his wallet. Let's say he had access to it. Do you sell it now? Or is it going to go up? You know, a year ago we were talking about Bitcoin. We couldn't believe it's at $1,500 a Bitcoin. It's now at $15,000 a Bitcoin. And it could, but what will happen next year when it's at $150,000 a Bitcoin? And you said, I sold it for $800,000. I probably should have kept it because it'd be worth $8 million today. I don't know. There's a lot of luck in that. It's amusing. I find it amusing. It's kind of silly. But walking amongst us, right now, walking amongst us, there are people who are Bitcoin millionaires. There's even one person, at least one person, who is a Bitcoin billionaire. And that's the guy who created Bitcoin, a Japanese name. We don't know where he came from or who he is. Satoshi Nakamoto created it in 2009. And as often is the case when you create a pyramid scheme like Bitcoin or currency like Bitcoin, he has quite a bit of it. And part of the reason people wonder if he's even still alive is his Bitcoin's worth quite a bit. More than $17 billion today. And he hasn't touched it. If you had $17 billion in a hard drive in the corner, you might want to cash it in, wouldn't you? $17 billion. He might become the first trillionaire if Bitcoin keeps going up. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He's got to be dead, right? Unless he's already rich or has enough. Maybe he's a 100 millionaire and he doesn't see the need for the money. Or maybe he believes Bitcoin will continue to go up. Wouldn't you feel silly if you sold your Bitcoin? He's the 52nd richest man in the world right now, if there is one Satoshi Nakamoto. It's not his real name. We know that. The Winklevoss twins are billionaires. They had the foresight to get into Bitcoin big. They bought $11 million worth of Bitcoin some years ago. It's well worth more than a billion. Nakamoto has 1 million Bitcoin, roughly. 1 million Bitcoin. And we know, and this is the interesting thing, and this is kind of the nature of Bitcoin, we know which are his because they're the earliest Bitcoin. They're at the beginning of the blockchain. And so people are watching. If there's ever any, if transaction happens to those coin, we will know. If Nakamoto sold one coin, it's one of the reasons when people claim they're Satoshi Nakamoto, as somebody did a year ago, there's a simple proof. No problem. Just move one Bitcoin or a quarter of a Bitcoin or a thousandth of a Bitcoin. Just move one of the Satoshi Bitcoins, one of the first blockchain transactions. Just move one of those. If he does that, it's conclusive proof. He's Nakamoto. He never did it. Move a Satoshi. You don't have to move much. And you don't even have to sell it. Just move it. So Lou MM asked a question, well, how do you convert it to dollars? That's what the exchanges like Coinbase are for. And really the way they do it is they find a buyer. And that's why there are plenty of people who think, if I had Bitcoin today worth, what is it, $17,000, I would sell it. Because... It's 1950 again? Holy cow, I got to find the password. So Steve's getting closer to a million.
Yeah.
Let me go to CoinMarketCap.
I was hoping I'd get up.
19,354.
It got to 19,899 last night.
Wow. Wow. That is amazing.
It got up there, then it dropped, and it went back up.
Well, because people sell off, you know.
It tells me that it's not going to crash.
I don't think it's going to crash. I think there's a market for it. But again, that's the issue. If people stop buying it, if people lose faith and say, yeah. And that could happen. News events could do that, too, because the Chinese government could say, more importantly, the U.S. government could say, we're going to make Bitcoin illegal. Chinese already have made Bitcoin illegal, I think. But that's why neither Steve nor I are anxious to find our Bitcoin, because then we'd have this conundrum of, well, what do you do now? Do you sell it? Do you keep it? Do you sell one coin? Collect 20 grand and say, well, I have 7.85. Do you sell one coin or what do you do? I don't know if Steve password protected his Bitcoin or not. You don't have to password protect a wallet.
Plus the forks. You got cash and gold.
Yeah.
And diamond.
Oh, there's diamond too?
The diamond's teeny.
Yeah. Somebody said when I described this idea of going to an exchange that supports cash and gold, Bitcoin, cash and gold, and claimed my cash and gold, they said, no, that doesn't work that way. But I don't know if they know. There's a lot of misinformation. Hey, Chris, did you cash your Bitcoin in for Bitcoin, gold, and cash?
Well, it doesn't work like that. They are split out. They're the same blockchain up to the point where they fork.
Oh, so you don't get extra money.
It is extra money, pretty much.
You only get what you got, what the fork is. Okay. We'll be back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Merry Christmas. I love it. I didn't, you know, it's funny. I've been talking about Bitcoin, and I just was assuming it was, you know, last time I checked, what was it, $14,000 or $15,000? It hit $20,000 again last night. Oh, yeah, yeah. Best not to think about it. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, coming up in about 10 minutes. We'll talk about digital photography. Meanwhile, Karen, Los Angeles. Hi, Karen. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Oh, hi. God, I was falling asleep listening to Bitcoin.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to put you to sleep.
I used to listen on KFI on Sundays, and then they did this charger nonsense. I started listening on
iHeartRadio.
I started listening Sundays, not listening, watching you on the computer, which is great.
Yeah, we stream.
Except that I'm stuck all day Sunday.
Oh no, I'm sorry. You can still take it. You can still listen in the car. You don't have to watch.
No car, just at home doing other stuff.
Okay, you can walk around. You can put it. We have audio and video, and KFI would be at great pains for me to tell you, and I will. And football season's not going to last forever, but when football season's over, we'll be back on. But in the meantime, they do broadcast the show, continue to broadcast the show on the iHeartRadio app. So
I don't have a cell phone. I'm too poor.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you found me on your computer.
But I happened to notice, because I was watching the This Week in Tech after the show.
Yes.
And that you're using the Microsoft Studio service. Okay.
You want to get poor, buy that quick. That'll get $3,000 for that computer.
I know, because I researched it.
Are you an artist?
Yes, I called you before using another name.
Oh, I know who you are. Okay, yeah. We can go anonymous. That's okay. But I know who you are now.
Actually, the Annie was not an anonymous name. It's a title for a Tibetan Buddhist nun.
Oh, that's neat. I didn't know. See, I didn't pick that up.
Being anonymous, but no one would know that. But anyway, I'm poor and I'm old. But I'm using a Windows 7. But in a couple of months, I'm going to have to get upgrade somehow. And I saw you're using the Studio Surface. And I wanted to know which model you were using.
So Microsoft has four different kinds of Surfaces. They have a Surface tablet they call the Surface Pro. It's very confusing because they're all Surfaces. They have a Surface detachable tablet laptop-like thing called the Surface Book. They have the Surface Laptop, which is not detachable. It's like a traditional laptop. And that's kind of a weird one because it has a Alcantara. It has a fabric on the keyboard, which is weird. And then they have the Surface Studio, which is what you saw me using. And I have had all of them, so I can tell you about these. Now, for an artist, the laptop is not a good idea because you can't Do you want to draw with a pen? Is that your idea?
No, I use graph. I'm kind of like collage stuff.
Okay, so you're still working in physical media. You don't need a digital device.
No. It's all computer because I'm allergic. I quit painting because I'm,
Neat. So do you use scrapbooking software? What kind of software do you use?
No. PaintShop Pro.
Nice.
For years. Which was easy. And then now I'm kind of switching over to Photoshop Elements. I have 9 and 10. I have the last.
Do you use a pen or you just use your mouse?
No.
Your mouse to do it.
Just mouse.
Well, I'll tell you.
It's kind of unsnagged too. It's kind of like making collage.
So you take
editing pictures.
Yeah.
I collect.
Yeah, I get it. Snagit is a screen capture program. So you take little. It's like doing collage, but it's all digital.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all digital. So the thing is, the Surface. I mean, I wondered what model you were using.
So the one I'm using is Surface Studio.
Right.
That's like an all-in-one. It looks like an iMac, it has a base and a single screen.
I saw one at Best Buy. The screen is incredible.
Beautiful screen, but one of the best screens made, 3,000 dots by 2,000 dots. And the thing I like about it for you and any artist or designer is it tilts all the way down to 15 degrees. So
yeah, that's what I thought.
It's like a drafting table.
Right.
And then it has a pen. A pen is very precise, and it's a touch screen. So a lot of what you do, for instance, Snagit, you could just use the pen to lasso you wanted.
I have a small Wacom tablet that I...
It's basically the same, except instead of having a tablet that's kind of... remote controlling the mouse pointer, you're doing it with your finger or with your pen, and it's wonderful. I think you would love it, but it's ridiculously priced. It's so expensive.
God, I know. But which model are you using on that tech?
I'm using the base Surface Studio. So the least expensive one is
$3,000. I know.
I'm not going to recommend it because it's overpriced because... the i5 is fine, but they don't put very fast drives in it. We ended up taking it apart and putting faster drives in it because they use such slow drives. And
I read your review about it on, you know.
Oh, you're all up on this. That's good.
Oh,
thank
well,
you,
I mean, you know, I'm going to have to do it in a couple of months.
Well, for you, maybe you don't spend as much money and you get something a little smaller like the Surface Pro, which is basically a tablet that you could hold. It's a little smaller.
Well,
but
need a big screen.
You need the big screen.
I'm looking at on your 23-inch screen, and I have a, you know.
Well, you don't have a choice with the Surface Studio. It's the screen it comes with, which
yeah,
is,
I know
which is 30 inches.
I know. It's yeah. beautiful. But what I wanted to ask you.
If I had my Bitcoin, I would just buy it for you, Karen. Now I've got to unlock that wallet that's sitting there. And 'cause you deserve this. This is beautiful.
I know the set now. Okay, the middle one, the 6,000 one's not really any good, but the seven, which has all the extra stuff, you know.
Actually, I should check because Microsoft has discounted all of their Surfaces for the holidays. Let me just see.
Oh, really?
Let me just see what the base model. You know, it's still $3,000.
Yeah. No.
Thanks, Microsoft. Thank you.
Discount. Yeah. But I can't do it for a couple of months. I have to pay off my teeth.
Teeth are far more important than a computer.
But I wanted to know, you know, the 7 now.
No, don't get the i7. Get the base model.
Get the 5.
Get the basic 3. There's no reason to spend
because
$500 more.
You aren't
going to use that power. You don't need it.
Okay. So that's what I wanted to find out.
Save your pennies, Karen. And but if you could afford this $3,000 one, I think you would adore it.
Oh, it would go on my Best Buy credit card, and I would be paying it off for
yeah. I'm trying to think if there's other companies that make similar products for less.
That's what I was going to ask you.
I think Lenovo has a Surface Studio-like.
Except that, you know, the thing is a screen. I'm 74,
I don't, I think
and my eyes
yes.
are...
Karen, what you're getting for the $3,000 is actually worth it. It is that expensive of a screen. You also want the pen to be responsive, and nobody does that better than Microsoft.
Okay, so, all right, so it's a 5. Now, I have another question to ask you.
Hang on, Karen. I got to take a break, but I will get to your question. We'll just do it during the break, because Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, is coming up in just a little bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'll take more of your calls, too. 888-ASK-LEO. Hold on, Karen. All right. Sorry about that. I just had to take that break.
Okay.
I love you. You're great. I just think you're wonderful. Can we see any of your work? Do you put it online or anything?
No, I don't.
You just do it for yourself. You know, my daughter is becoming more and more of an artist, and I say, Abby, just don't show anybody. Don't tell anybody about it. Just do it because you love it and do it for yourself. Right?
Well, I was, you know, I got my degrees in art and whatnot, and I couldn't handle the pro part where you have to kiss up to.
It's political. It's so
virgin.
Both my sister has an MFA in painting from Columbia. My mom's an artist.
Oh, yeah,
and
right.
It's political.
It's so political. I mean, was involved in the art scene in Los Angeles when I was younger, and I'm actually in a book about Los Angeles art
in the 50s
or something. But I couldn't deal with the politics, and it almost destroyed my
creativity. That's what I tell Abby.
So I became a nun.
Be a private art. Were you a Buddhist nun? Were you a Buddhist nun?
Yeah, I'm an ordained in the Chinese and Tibetan tradition.
That's so cool.
I'm revealing this to you. This is my secret.
Okay, well, you know, you're still on the stream. I know you probably know that, so don't, you know, you're not revealing it to the world on the radio show. But
thank goodness.
There's still a few people.
No, I know. You have a Catholic priest, so you might as well.
I am a Buddhist. I love the Buddhist faith. Are you kidding? I would be a Tibetan Buddhist in a heartbeat.
So,
and you know who's online with us right now is another guy who probably feels the same way because he keeps going up to the mountains up there, Chris Marquardt, right, Chris?
Oh, yeah, I know. My main teacher is from Bhutan.
Oh, I want to just move to Bhutan.
He knows him as Gantan Toku, his name, but, you know.
Do you know who that is, Chris?
No, where in Bhutan does he live?
Black Mountains. He's very famous.
Oh, okay.
He's he's a very
Karen. I'm going to come down and visit you. I want to see your art. I bet it's gorgeous. Do you do mandala like art?
No, it's just my own.
But it's meditative for you. It's
actually, you know, I told you it's flat painting, nothing, you know, yeah. No 3D, but not mandala. I'm not. It's my own stuff.
Yeah, it should be, right? It's personal.
So I was going to ask you real quick.
Lenovo does make a something they call the Idea Center, which is a lot less expensive, but I don't think it's as good. And I don't think it tilts back to that 15 degrees. And I think,
I'll get in a couple of months, get the 5 and put it on my Best Buy credit card.
I think you would be so happy.
Oh, the screen is incredible. But I was going to ask you real quick. I tried to find, you mentioned a cable place that was cheap online.
Yeah, monoprice.com.
Okay, because I couldn't find it on your site. I looked for it.
Oh, I'm sorry. We'll make sure that that's in the show notes for today.
I need to get some, if they have them, FireWire cables for my old.
They do. M-O-N-O price. Think of a single price.
M-O-N-O.
Monoprice.com.
Okay, great. Oh, thanks so much.
Karen, bless you. You are a blessing. Thank you for being here. And from now on, when I'm talking to the cameras, I'll think of you on the other side.
Okay. All right, thank you. I'll listen to Chris Marquardt. I always do. It's interesting to see these people that I've heard on the radio for years.
Oh, I'm so glad you found us. I'm glad there's football.
Yeah.
I'm glad the Chargers, not only did they move from San Diego, they moved Karen to the stream.
I'm starting to listen to you on the computer.
Thank you so much, Karen.
Thank you so much.
All right, take care.
You too.
Bye-bye. Oh, she is so sweet. I want to just send her a Surface Studio. I really do.
Well, recover your bitcoins.
I just need those bitcoins. Our show today, our Tech Guy podcast brought to you today by GoToWebinar. Love GoToWebinar. I'm glad actually to see them back. We haven't had ads for them in a while. I've used them. I've been using them for ages, given webinars on there. What is a webinar? It's an online seminar on the web, kind of. But the idea is you can present from your computer with your camera. You can show your screen. You can see yourself. And you can present live to virtually unlimited audience. And that live webinar can be recorded and then presented after the fact on demand to even more people. You can make those on-demand webinars every bit as interactive. They have all sorts of nice features. For instance, the poll. You can have up to 20 polls per webinar. Each poll can have 20 questions. You can set them up ahead of time so you can, if you're a teacher, you could have a quiz at the end or pop quizzes in the middle. But if you're also, maybe you're doing a sales presentation, you want to see how engaged your audience is. Do they like what they're seeing? You can do polls on the fly, you know. Well, do you understand what I'm talking about? That kind of thing. I think polls are great because it really makes for the attendee, it makes it more interesting. And it's great for you as a presenter because we use polls a lot because you can see what's going on with your attendees. You can understand what they're understanding. It's very easy to use GoToWebinar to set up a webinar. You can do it right from your phone, iOS or Android. They let you set up custom email invitations with your company logo. In fact, all the materials for the webinar can have your logo or custom image on it. You could do confirmations, email invitations, reminders. There's automated email templates, too, so you don't even have to think about it. You know, a week before, 5 days before, 2 days before, remind people, that kind of thing. I really think this is a great platform. Up to 6 presenters, too. So you can have a team. You could do a panel. Each presenter can have a camera, but they can also show their screen or show an application. Fully secure, 128-bit AES encryption. And by the way, people love GoToWebinar. It's number one in customer satisfaction. Another important part, analytics. You can see how many people watched, what their reaction was. You're just a click away from qualified leads, from metrics, and the information you need to make your webinar better next time. Turn your next presentation into a conversation. Use GoToWebinar, GoToWebinar.com/podcast if you want to know more. GoToWebinar.com/podcast, the best way to present. GoToWebinar.com/podcast. We thank him for their support of the Tech Guy Show. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy. It's great to see you. Great to talk to you. How are you today?
I'm doing wonderful.
Happy Christmas. Your people invented the Christmas tree, I hear.
I have no idea, probably. Somewhere from
Tannenbaum, Tannenbaum.
We invented a lot of famous Christmas songs, that's for sure.
Yeah. Christmas, you know, the Christmas markets in Germany are so beautiful.
And of course you have to have Glühwein, which is the mulled wine, the hot mulled wine in the cold snow.
I'm ready. So let's do it. So what do we want to talk about today, Chris?
Well, it has to do with Christmas. It's the time of year when you want to spend a little bit maybe on the photo geek in your life and give him a little bit for Christmas. And I went out and looked at a few products that I would like to just quickly talk about.
They range from
$16 to $210. So it's all just, you don't have to cash in your Bitcoins. It's not a lot.
Let's do it.
They're all stuff that I either own or I was impressed by. The first thing I find really interesting, and that's only $16. You've been on ships and you've taken photos with your smartphone.
Yes.
Have you ever been afraid that it might slip from your hand and end up in the water?
Well, every time.
You get this, you develop this vice grip around your phone.
I'm going on a sailboat in a week in the middle of the Caribbean, and I'm going to bring my... Tell me.
All right. It's by Black Rapid. It's called the Wander, W-A-N-D-E-R. And it's a carrying case that has an attachment for a wrist strap. So you can... use your phone, and if you drop it, it doesn't fall in the water. I've seen a phone go in the water on one of my photo tours, and it's not a nice sight.
Not a pretty sight, no.
Yeah. So this is something that, yeah, it works, and it's about $16. The next one, let's go up in the $50 range, and it's a little light that I have and that I use every now and then. It's a little mobile LED light that has a battery built in, and it's by a company called Aputure, A-P-U-T-U-R-E. It's the ALM9. And it's a pocket-sized light source with LEDs. It has 9 steps of brightness. It has an integrated lithium-ion battery. It runs on full brightness over 1.5 hours. You can put it on your camera. You can put it on a little tripod. It is daylight balanced, and you can put a little it comes with an orange gel that you can put in front of it.
So if I'm in a dark room, I put this on the camera, is it kind of for video more, or it's not a flash?
Well, I use it, for example, for tiny products that I want to shoot, some product photography, or I want to add a bit of light to a portrait, then I might hold a camera in my right hand and hold that light in my left hand and just light that person.
It's more like a fill light than a flash.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Cool.
Then if you're into video, here is a product called the Rat Rig, RATRIG. It's a slider. Now, what is a slider? A slider is something that is used in video production. It's a thing that you put your camera on, and then you can move the camera sideways, and you get this little parallax motion that makes – it just increases the production quality of your video. And normally those are quite expensive. The Rat Rig, the 14-inch version, which I have and I use, and it's very, very short and very lightweight. It's also very wallet-friendly. It's about $90. I've seen it for about $90. What I really like about it is that it doesn't – well, there are two different kinds of sliders. They are the ones that glide on a special pad where the camera glides, and then there are those that use ball bearings, that use little Mylar wheels and ball bearings, and this is one of those. It's much, much smoother than the gliding ones. And you can put it on a tripod. You can get accessories, like put legs on it.
Is it motorized, or do you push it with your fingers?
You push it with your fingers, but you can add a motor to it. There's an additional kit that has a motor. But for normal video use, you don't even need that motor.
Interesting.
So that would be around 90.
We use a slider in the studio for video shooting, and it's a nice, nice thing, yeah.
And this one is so affordable, and the quality is really good. Yeah. I really like it. I use it whenever I do video. I will get this out and put it on a tripod and then just slightly move the camera, and that just adds that little bit to production.
Good.
$100. A printer, a small printer by Canon called the Selfie, S-E-L-P-H-Y. Hawaii.
None of these things are spelled normally. This is going to be very hard for James to write down. All right. The selfie.
Now the selfie, the model I was looking at was the CP1300. It's a compact little printer. It prints postcard size photos. I think that you can even get postcard templates for it that have the lines and everything on the back.
It's so cute.
Postcards.
It's so cute.
And there are a couple of interesting things about it. I use it on workshops. Like we have that printer out and people can print their stuff and it doesn't use ink or any weird thing. It uses what's called thermotransfer printing. So you get a really good quality out of it that is instantly it's like a professional print. It's glossy, it feels good, it doesn't look like it was on weird paper
or
anything.
How much per print?
Well, under 30 cents, usually in the 26 to 27 cents.
Oh, that's not bad at all.
It's not bad at all. And you get the boxes of like 100, over 100 sheets of paper with the cartridge, with the ink or the system that it uses. So you always have the right amount of ink, the right amount of paper. It's not like you run out of yellow and then you have to buy yellow and then you run out of blue. And it's all the things pretty much in one package. And I love it. It's wireless, so you can hook it up to your Wi-Fi. You can print, if your camera supports it, you can print direct from the camera. It has a built-in card reader. So it is just one of those things that's a no-brainer to have.
Oh, I'm going to make this a Christmas present. I like this. Okay.
The photographer you give it to will like it too.
Don't say anything. Yeah. Okay. What else? This is great.
Last but not least, this is a roughly $210 item. You know the Instax, the Fuji Instax format, which is like Polaroid. It's an instant film. And normally the cameras just take a picture, the Instax photo comes out, and then you can watch it develop. And it's pretty popular. I think it's Fuji's biggest seller for the last couple of years, has been selling like hotcakes. Now, there is one model, and it's a bit more expensive, as I said, over $200. And it's called the Instax Square SQ10 Hybrid Instant Camera. And that is a digital camera with a built-in Instax printer, pretty much.
Oh,
so
wow.
The place I saw this first was when I was actually in Bhutan. One of our participants, Olaf, the German participant, brought this camera. And it's like all these Instax cameras. It's big and it looks kind of funny. But what he did was so amazing. He took pictures of the locals and like people working in a field and handed them their pictures like half a minute after he took the picture.
See, that's what's so cool, right?
But it's a digital camera, so he still has those pictures.
Oh, is it a decent digital camera?
Well, it's good. It's okay. It's not like your 5D Mark IV.
Chris, thank you. You have done so much to help me with my shopping list. I bought three of those things. Chris Marquardt, discoverthetopfloor.com. We'll put all of these in the show notes at techguylabs.com. Thank you, Chris. Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas.
That is awesome. Boy, you are good. I didn't know. The only one I'd ever seen before was the Instax. That is a nice combination of stuff. Thank you.
You should have seen the faces on people when you hand them the
sense.
Picture.
Because they don't know what tours. You're doing. You're snapping, snapping, snapping. So giving them that is great.
You're taking a picture and they can keep it and they will keep it. They will cherish it. And you still have the photo. So you can even edit them on the camera. So you can like put a different color profile on or do some vignettes on or whatever.
It's not a great digital camera. Is it as good as a smartphone?
I don't even know the megapixels on
it's
that.
1920
but
by 1920, so it's not super.
1920, it's like 2 megapixels. Yeah. It's not huge. It's big enough for the square format, for the Instax square format. But then you can print multiples. Like you take a picture of three people in the field and print it out three times and give it to them.
Oh,
it's real.
That's so cool. Yeah. So that's really something fun. You just bring along with all the pro cameras, so they kind of are comfortable about what's going on with the photography.
Course.
Yeah.
How? Oh, neat. this is a massive icebreaker.
Yeah, and you bring that little printer with you on your workshops.
I have this on some of the workshops. Actually, in one of the workshops we do, which is a big one, a long one, usually other people bring them too. So we have like a whole table, five of those printers on there, and everyone can print out their photos. It just changes something the moment you have those pictures.
But they're just 5x7. They're not. You can't get bigger.
No, they're small. They're small. That's what they do. They've been around for years. The format hasn't changed.
The eyes
are there. Yeah. It's
wonderful. Cheap. It's $99. I didn't realize the per print cost was so low. That makes a big difference, I think. Yeah.
Yep, definitely.
Oh, how cool. How fun. And it has Bluetooth, so you can send the picture to it from your phone.
If you're, I do this from an iPhone. Depends on what your camera supports,
so
but
that's
yes.
kind of cool. So you just take the picture and right away you could print it wirelessly. I like that.
Yep.
Chris, you're a font of wonderful stuff. Thank
well,
you, Chris.
Well, it's Christmas time. The quick calendar check.
No you said shows for the next 2 weeks.
No for the next 2 weeks. Okay, that is fine. So I will be back on the 7th.
Yes.
That works for me.
Are you
that
back in town? Good. So we don't have to pre-record?
I'll be back in town, yes.
Perfect. I will be back in town, too. Have
Christmas.
A great holiday. Merry Christmas, Chris. We'll see you next year. Bye-bye. Wow, that was great stuff. Got a lot of shopping done. I'm sorry. It's starting to feel a little bit festive around here, isn't it? Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. I think we helped a number of you with your shopping with Chris Marquardt, the photo guy. Don't forget his website, Discover the Top Floor. And I'll put in a plug for Chris because he has a number of wonderful photo books. If you have a film buff in your family, his film book is fantastic. He also has, and of course, the film book would probably be too late to get that for Christmas or Hanukkah. But he has a great series, digital series about Lightroom that you can get. Now I'm going to have to remember the name of it. I guess if you go to Discover the Top Floor, you could probably find it there. DiscoverTheTopFloor.com. And I'll tell you what, we'll put in the show notes at TechEyeLabs.com not only all of the products Chris mentioned, but we'll give him a little plug for his Lightroom seminar that's online and for his photo workshops, because those would be great gifts for the... And he has a free ebook too. You could give that and not tell him it's free, about photo processing. DiscoverTheTopFloor.com is his website. DiscoverTheTopFloor.com. Back to the phones we go. Bill in Upland, California. Hi, Bill. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Bill.
Hi, Leo.
Hey, welcome.
I met you at your old studio. Came up there and watched one of your shows, and then you interviewed me after the show.
Oh, what did we talk about?
Well, it was a Mac show, but that was the only one I could get into. I'm a PC guy, but anyway, yeah, we just talked about my tech career. And,
nice.
And
well, it's very nice to see
Hewlett Packard and that kind of thing.
Ah, yes. Well, it's nice to talk to you again. Welcome.
Okay, I bought a new HP Pavilion Power desktop.
Do you have to only buy HP computers from now on? Is that the rule?
Well, you're kind of trained that way. Everyone else is the enemy, you know?
Right. The good news is HP PCs are fantastic these days. They're making some of the best computers out there.
Yeah, this has the Ryzen 7 processor and
great on AMD.
Graphics.
Nice,
and,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's I need it for not for gaming or anything, just need a good fast desktop. But I want to put an SSD drive in it. I bought a 250-gigabyte Samsung.
Mm-hmm.
And
you got the EVO or the EVO Pro?
It's the EVO,
yeah.
850 EVO.
Love the Samsung EVOs. Those are great SSDs. It's what I buy exclusively. So good choice.
Okay. Well, what I'm trying to do is PC came with Windows 10, and I want to copy it over to the SSD and then get rid of it on the hard drive and run off the SSD, and I'm not sure how to move the license and everything else.
The license you don't have to move. The license is associated with the PC directly, so a new hard drive won't in any way modify the license. That's the new thing in Windows 10, which I'm really grateful. Microsoft calls it an entitlement. Once you activate Windows 10 legitimately on any machine, Microsoft then kind of does a little snapshot of that machine We don't know. They don't tell us exactly how they do it, but I'm guessing it's the MAC address of the Ethernet card or of the Wi-Fi card. It's maybe information about the motherboard, a unique serial number, that kind of thing. And as long as you're still on that machine, activation's automatic. You don't have to call Microsoft. You don't have to enter a serial number.
Updates and all?
Nothing. Updates and everything. And forever, by the way. Microsoft has said, you know, that's it. This is the last version of Windows. So forever, Microsoft terms might be 5 years. I don't know, but it is for a while anyway. Right. So you're going to not have any problems if, for instance, you – and if it's a brand new machine, probably the easiest thing to do is to make the recovery drive on that thing. You know, and you need, I think, an 8 or a 16 gig USB – I just put them on thumb drives. I always do that. As soon as I get a PC home, make that recovery on a USB
key. Right here. Okay.
Good. And then so then you put the new drive in and use the recovery to reinstall Windows and start over. If you've had it for a while and you've done a lot of work on it, then you want a bit-by-bit copy of the old hard drive onto the new hard drive. That's a little more tricky, but you can certainly do that. Is that your desire, or you just want to reinstall?
It's brand new, still in the box.
Oh, you're golden, man. You're golden.
Yeah.
Nothing to do then. Just to, you know, you make sure the hard drive is compatible. It probably is. Brand new PC, it's going to be using a SATA cable. It'll work just fine on that Evo. Right. You shouldn't have any trouble just taking the old one out. What I would do, it's a tower case. You have room in there, right? Is keep the old hard drive as a second drive.
Yes.
And put the new SSD in as your boot drive, as your C drive.
Yes.
Now, that in the old days, we did that by where it was on the cable. I think it still has to do with where the cable's plugged into the motherboard. So in all likelihood, that boot drive currently is on SATA 0. Just use that cable for the SSD. So you're going to have to just move the drive down a slot and put the SSD in there. And then boot up to the USB recovery and install Windows 10, and you're done, because it'll activate. It's already activated once. Do boot it once. Make sure the activation occurred. And you're good to go.
Okay, great.
Couldn't be easier.
I really appreciate it.
And you'll see, by the way, a lot faster. That computer's going to be a lot faster. SSD's fantastic.
Excellent. Yeah. I did want to mention to you, my twin boys have been up there to visit you as well, and one of them was parked on his motorcycle right out front and taking a picture of your old studio, and you walked up and surprised
me. I remember that. I know. That was one of that was your boy, huh? Oh, that's nice.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, give him my regards. It's nice. Come back. Bring the whole family.
Okay. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Nice to talk to you, Bill. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, we have an open studio policy. I know sometimes people think that's nuts. We have some security, obviously, and we do ask if you want to come by, that you just email tickets@twit.tv. That's the name of the company, Twit. I know it's a terrible name, but it stands for This Week in Tech. It makes sense. Email tickets@twit.tv, so we expect you, and we'll, you know, let you in, and you can join us during the show. You can sit in. I have a very comfy chair for you and me, and you can sit in, and participate. It's always fun to have visitors. I like that. All right, let's get to Ken in Center Hill, PA. Hi, Ken.
How are you doing today?
I'm very well. You want to know about Fing? Fing?
Well, yes. I'm looking at the new Fing box.
That I don't know about. I've only used the Fing software. I mean, I know that they've released hardware now. It's very affordable.
Yes, And my concern or question is, are there any security concerns with something like FingBox?
Only in that you got to hope Fing's keeping it up to date. And this is always an issue with any of these devices, and there's a lot of devices like this now, is I think Fing's a good company. They've been around making software for years, but this is their first hardware. It is really comes down to trusting Fing to keep it up to date. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So, I'm sorry I had to take a break, but I'm still talking to you.
Yep.
I don't have any experience with the company or with the FingBox. I like its features, but it's one of those crowdsourced products, and that always makes me a little bit nervous. They're only charging $129 for it.
Right.
And so, are they going to be around to maintain it in a couple of years? No one knows, right?
Right. I'm looking at it on a different way. Yeah. If you go onto the site with your PC, you can see all the searches or all the scans you've done on a network. It posts them there.
Right.
And now with a thing box, would that make that available
to
somebody else to be able to see the scans that you've ran?
Yes. So this is the whole, this is an IoT device. So all of the warnings we constantly give about IoT apply here. IoT is a great thing. I mean, putting smarts in stuff that's connected to the internet can really help you, but it's connected to the internet. And that means it's potentially vulnerable if the company that makes it, A, doesn't do the right job up front. I think, given their expertise, the Fingbox is going to be well designed, but nothing's perfect. And there will be exploits. There'll be holes. And that those holes could do all sorts of things. It could become a portal for a bad guy into your home network. The data that it's recording could be accidentally leaked to a bad guy. All sorts of things. And so that's why it's so important with an IoT device that you buy it from a company that's going to be around, that's going to patch it, that makes a commitment to patching it. I'm sure Fing is committed to that much. But it's not a big company. And so, I think if I were going to put this on my network, I would just feel like I had to pay close attention to any security flaws. I would weekly search for Fing security exploits, security flaws, and make sure that that device isn't vulnerable.
Right. I have a network. I'm a hobbyist with networks. And I have a network that has a lot of bandwidth problems. It's getting a WISP connection. And I was thinking about putting it on it to monitor the bandwidth.
Yeah, WISPs are always challenging. Yeah, because, bandwidth comes and goes with a wireless provider. It's up and down.
Right. And I was thinking that I could do a remote login to this device to see what the bandwidth was doing and accordingly call the company and say, hey, get it fixed.
The alternative to doing this would be building your own, beige box with PF Sense or some other well-known, firewall security platform on it. But that's a lot of work. You're going to maintain it. You got to pay attention to it. But the good news about programs like PF Sense is they're well supported and they're going to be around for a long time. And they are experts with a real track record and they're always going to keep it up to date. And it's not $129. Now, what we're talking about is not $129, right?
Right.
Steve Gibson uses PF Sense on a, old computer. That's how he protects himself. Come to think of it, he bought a rack mount PF Sense machine. From a third party and put PF Sense on there. It's designed for PF Sense. So those are more robust solutions that have been around long enough that I think people trust them and know about them. Fing is a, a nice little program I've used on Android for years. This is their first hardware, to my knowledge. It's inexpensive. I just don't know. Yes, it will do those things that you want, but so would, most smart firewalls that would tell you a lot about what's going on. They keep track of it. On the other side, PF Sense, because it's so widely used, is a target for hackers in a way that the Fing, they've only got 20,000 units out there, may not be.
Yeah.
Security is always tricky. Whenever you put something like that on the network, something that's communicating with the outside world, it's risky. And so there's a certain amount of trust that goes into it. And I just don't know enough about Fing to say with confidence, oh, yeah, these guys are great.
Yeah.
That's the problem. I think it would do exactly what you want. And I think if you do it, you're going to want to pay attention.
Okay.
And just kind of keep your eye peeled. Subscribe to their number of security newsletters you can subscribe to. I get a InfoSec industry newsletter that will let you know if there's a problem. Keep your eye peeled. That way, if there is a problem, you can take it offline.
Right.
Until it's fixed. I think that's all I would say. At $129, this thing looks great.
Yeah, that's when I saw it coming out there. It looked like exactly what I wanted.
Yeah, I don't mean to scare you. I know nothing bad about this company.
Right.
It's just that this is exactly the kind of thing that could be exploited, and so you got to pay attention. That's all. And I have no reason to think that Fing won't keep it up to date.
Is there any other company? Like, I think there's another one called iNet.
Oh, there's a. This is a giant category all of a sudden. There's Cujo. We talked about it yesterday. There's a lot of these devices. I would frankly trust Fing over anybody else, only because they have such a long track record of doing network analysis.
Mm-hmm. Right?
So they at least have that expertise. Let me ask the chat room. I mean, you guys have an opinion on the Fing box? Is there, you know, there's, you know, a million of these. Cujo, Bitdefender box, Dojo. Disney has a product for families called Circle. This has become a big category. I use, you know, Eero routers. They have some of the same features, not the network monitoring, though, that you want to do. For that, you need a harder core box like this. Here's what I say. Get it. It's going to do what you're saying, what you want to do, which is monitor your bandwidth, monitor it up and down, give you, you know, logs of what's going on. It's going to do all of that. And then just keep an eye out, make sure it stays secure. And, you know, what would be encouraging is if you get fairly regular updates from Fing.
Right.
That would encourage me. That would mean they're paying attention.
Yeah,
When you go 3 months without an update, then you're going to start paying attention to it and say, "Well,
yeah."
And at $129, if you get 5 years out of it, you're fine.
Yeah,
if you get a year out of it, you're probably fine. It's $10 a month. It's nothing.
Yeah. Well, if I can get the Wisp to work a little better,
Wisps
just
are always
telling them they're not working. You know, that would be fun.
Yeah, you could send them a log. Say, see.
Yeah,
but I'll tell you what they're going to say, which is, well, yeah, but we're out of it's not in our control. It's wireless. Stuff goes up and down. I mean, it could be in their control, but
oversold. Hey,
yeah, sometimes that happens. I never heard that happen before. Comcast does it. Are you is Center Hall in a rural area? Is that?
Center Hall has out here where this is located. There's no other option. There's no Comcast.
Right.
Even DSL doesn't exist here.
So you're grateful you at least have a Wisp, but Wisps are wireless is never as good as hardwired. So,
right, exactly.
All right, hey, nice to talk to you, Ken.
Okay, good
and if you know if you do get the Fing box, call us back in a month or two and let us know.
Okay, I'll do that.
I appreciate
that. Happy holiday.
You too. Happy holidays. Bye
bye.
Oh, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about tech, computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, stuff to buy for gifts, stuff to buy for yourself. 8888 Ask Leo. That's my phone number. 888-827-5536 anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, it's toll-free here, but outside that area, it's still toll-free if you use Skype or, you know, something like that and call those numbers. That should be free. 8888 Ask Leo. Website, this is going to be a good day for the website. James DeRuvo is typing as fast as he can. We've got a lot of information up there. And if you go to techguylabs.com, you don't have to write anything down. Just go there and you'll find it. Episode 1449 in a continuing saga, saving the world one computer at a time. And that's free, by the way. There's no sign up. There's no fee. So please take advantage of it. Good search engine up there, and you can search for stuff, find the things we talked about, get the links you need. Brian's in Panama City, Florida. Hi, Brian. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Good to talk to you. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for calling.
Well, I was listening to your monologue about net neutrality, and I couldn't really tell if you are in favor of this move by the FCC or if you're opposed to it.
Oh, I'm dead opposed to it. As, by the way, I'm not alone in this. A letter was written from some of the founders of the internet and people who currently run the internet, several dozen strong, including Vince Cerf, who is widely considered the father of the internet, who said that the net was born open and neutral and needs to stay that way. And what the FCC has done is to benefit big internet service providers at the detriment of us end users.
Well, I am very concerned anytime the government wants to regulate anything. So I'm.
Do you trust the water coming out of your tap?
I do, but
that's government regulated because government has water safety restrictions, and that's a good thing.
Understandable.
Before we go any further, you would agree some government regulation is a good thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Course. Yeah. So
because if you're dogmatically opposed to that, then you're right. We shouldn't have any regulations.
But
no, I'm not saying any. Yeah. But you know, the water companies, as you mentioned, they're regulated at a local level. But when you're talking about something that can be basically dictated by those who, you know, are currently in power, I get a little concerned. So, for instance, you were concerned about people having their thumb on the scale. You know, the ultimate scale exists in Washington, D.C., and I'm afraid that if you have people, Comcast, you know, whoever the big guys are, when the rule is in place, that they can simply make enough donations that they can convince the people who are in power at the time to dictate exactly what neutral is.
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, we have to, if we have regulations, it has to be regulators who are fair. We need umpires, and they have to be trusted and fair. But I think that's exactly what you describe has already happened. That's exactly what's happened. Comcast and Verizon and AT&T have spent a lot of money on Congress and have effectively said, we don't want anybody to tell us what to do. We want to be able to make a little more money by charging a little more for certain content, by blocking content that competes with our businesses. That's what just happened. So I understand what you're saying. You're worried that regulators might put the thumb on the scale in the other way, and that's always a risk. But I would submit that's what just happened.
Well, when you say that is just what happened, what do you mean?
By throwing out rules that have been in place, and people sometimes say, oh, no, that rule is a 2015 rule. It's true. But there were rules prior to it that the courts threw out. Verizon sued, and the courts went to said to the FCC, you don't have the authority to regulate unless you declare internet service providers to be common carriers. And then you do have authority to regulate common carriers like the phone company. So the FCC in 2015 said, all right, we declare them to be common carriers under Title II of the Telecommunications Act, and we will regulate them. We'll use a light touch regulation because that Title II does allow them to do things like set tariffs, and they're not going to do that, and they haven't done that. But they do have a mandate to regulate the phone company, and they say, well, as far as we're concerned, internet service providers act much like a phone company. They pass information along without modifying it. They are common carriers. So that regulation in 2015 was a change, but it effectively gave them the same powers to do what they had been doing since the very beginning. And I'll use it as – there are many examples, but I used as an example AT&T, which the FCC said – blocked FaceTime, saying, well, it's a competitive product to our phone service. We don't want you to use it. So AT&T customers couldn't use FaceTime. The FCC stepped in. And I think, do you disagree? This is quite rightly so, said to AT&T, you can't block FaceTime.
No, I agree with that. And that's what you're talking about, I think, as far as the light touch regulation. So there were things happening even, you know, previous to this larger law that was put in place in 2015 that seemed to be working. You know, and when you guys were having the conversation about email providers being able to email somebody who's not on the same system that you are, all of that happened before this concept of net neutrality.
No, it didn't. No, it didn't. This is Fox. You're parroting a line that's coming from Fox News that I really want people to understand. It's one of the reasons I said this at the beginning of the show, because I read an editorial from Fox News. We have always had net neutrality. Larry Lessig, who is a legend, a constitutional lawyer and one of the early proponents of the internet, pointed out from day one, we've had net neutrality, and it's been protected in some cases by the FCC. And I can point again to more and more cases of that. The court said you need authority to do this. The FCC said, all right, we'll use Title II. There are perils to Title II because it lets us do a lot more than simply protect net neutrality. But I don't know of any case since 2015 where they have done that. They said light touch regulation. Maybe what we need, and I would welcome this, is to go back to Congress and say, all right, we don't want to use Title II of the Telecommunications Act, but you need to give the FCC authority to prevent internet service providers from doing things to benefit their business that's in, you know, not in the interest of the people, we the people of the United States. If you are with me on that, then let's do that. Let's go to Congress and say, let's give us a law that does that.
Yeah, that sounds fine. But, you know, when you're talking about competition, when you have one company that is...
There is no competition. You understand that. More than half the country has one internet service provider. 86% of the country has two internet service providers. That's the problem.
But you do have regional ISPs, though. And, you know, for the regional ISPs, if the big guys are not acting in the best interest of the customers, you still have some regional ISPs people can go to, you know, as an alternative.
Most people do not have that option. That's, you may be lucky enough to have that. If you're in an urban area, you probably do. In most cases, it's the phone company or the cable company or nothing.
Yeah, well, there still are some out there, and I'm afraid that under the concept of net neutrality that they could be wiped out.
Because we're using a regional ISP we love called SonicNet. They're very strongly in favor of net neutrality.
Mm-hmm.
They're very upset about what Ajit Pai and the FCC did on Friday. They feel that this is going to be a very big competitive problem for them.
Interesting. Well, the local regional ISPs in my area are actually afraid of the concept of net neutrality because they are afraid that the larger ISPs are going to be able to go to Congress and make the amount of donations that would be required to eliminate that.
We should be afraid of that. You're right. I agree. I mean, this is the biggest problem we have in the United States right now. We have the best Congress money can buy. And they act in favor. They absolutely act, as does the FCC, to benefit the big donors. But they really need to be the referees on the playing field acting for we the people. We need to make sure that that happens. And as voters, I hope you would do that. Turning away the regulations that protected us absolutely undermines the protections we had. It's saying no rules at all. And you watch, because there's no way the FCC can now say to AT&T, don't block FaceTime. There's no way they can say to Comcast, don't block BitTorrent. There's no way they can say to Verizon, you can't charge more for access to YouTube. And you just watch. Without the power to do that, these companies absolutely will. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Get ready for the Christmas season. 88-88. Ask Leo, 888-827-5536. I understand. I mean, I really do. People who mistrust government and say, well, you just can't put government in charge of the internet. That was a big debate among a lot of techies or libertarians. I know at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, the board there had some debates. We're not asking the government to regulate the internet. We're asking the government to do what we have asked the government to do forever, which is regulate businesses and make sure businesses do the right thing for us, we the people. Now, maybe you're saying, as our caller did, we don't trust the referees. Well, the answer is not to throw out the rules. The answer is to get better referees. And that's up to us as the electorate. You know, elect a better Congress, elect a better executive, appoint the right people to the FCC, and make sure that the referees do their job. That's the solution. We're not asking them to regulate the internet. That's not even what these rules do. They regulate the internet service providers. And it really comes down to, what do you think internet service should be? Should internet service be bit agnostic, I guess I would call it. Should it matter what those bits carry? No. An internet service provider should provide you with all the bits, access to all the internet, and not be deciding that certain bits are better than others, or some bits should be banned, or some bits should cost more. I pay for internet access. I should get all the bits. I should get all the internet, right? Do you agree with that? Well, you understand the companies see a huge profit in charging a little extra for bits you want more, whatever those might be, or perhaps slowing down or blocking bits from competitive services. You know, we don't want them to be doing a phone service over the internet. That's what we sell. We don't want them to be watching HBO over the internet. That's what we sell. Yeah, no. The internet's got to be free, and bits got to be equal. All bits are created equal. Now, if you want to charge by the bit, that's fine. Nobody's telling you how to charge. If you want, even bandwidth caps you can do. I wish we could eliminate those, and if we had true competition, it wouldn't be an issue. But we don't have true competition. And maybe the answer to this in the long run, of course, is to foster a competitive environment and make it possible. But right now, the way this works, and you can blame the FCC for this, is every community has one cable company and one phone company. And they own the lines coming into your home, and that's how you get the internet. If you had 100 different phone companies or 100 different cable companies, this wouldn't be as big of a problem. You just pick the one that gives you the best internet. We don't have that choice. It's one of the reasons, unfortunately, why this country, where the internet was invented, has about the worst internet in the developed world. Less bandwidth for more price than almost anywhere. We're not asking the government to run the internet. Please understand that. Although, where did the internet come from? Defense Department, government research, government-funded research. They created the internet, but we're not asking them to run it. We're asking them to make sure that the rules are observed and that the internet runs free. That's all. 8888 Ask Leo. Line 2 is Bill in San Carlos, California. Just down the road a piece. Hi, Bill.
Hey, Leo.
Welcome.
I guess it's safe once again to say Merry Christmas.
You can say Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa.
Yeah.
I prefer to celebrate the solstice, the longest night of the year coming up.
Oh, yeah. Dark is good.
You know why I like the longest night of the year? Because that means after that, it's going to get shorter. I like light.
Shorter.
Shorter.
That's right. Definitely. Always looking forward to that, the longer days. But, hey, I know I listened to the show a few weeks back, and the question was, what should you get, Amazon Echo or Google Home? And it seems to me your answer was either. They're both good or they're both the same or what have you. But what I'm curious about is how to optimize or trick out or do a Tim the Tool time upgrade or make it cooler. You know, because my girlfriend wants one for Christmas.
You want more power in your Echo?
Exactly. Well, that or, you know, how do you, like, maybe get multiple components and spread them around the house or, you know what I mean?
Well, first of all, you're going to decide on one platform because I have several, right, and it's just confusing. You can barely remember the syntax for one, let alone three or four. Mm-hmm. So pick one. And,
Because the daughter uses, Alexa, you know, that's what Tony calls it. And
if you're an Amazon Prime customer, you listen to Amazon Music, you buy stuff on Amazon, you listen to Audible books, all of those things work better on Echoes. So you're going to go with the Amazon.
We're going to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Google has advantages in other spheres, but an Echo has been around longer than anybody else. There's more special third party skills. I mean, yeah. And I think the best way to trick out an Echo. Well, here's what I would do. You can decide what you want to do. This is, to me, the Tim the Tool time. Buy the cheaper Echo Dot. Those are about $30. They're inexpensive. They have all the functionality of the Echo with one exception. They have a terrible little speaker in there. But they have a line out. And they also have Bluetooth, but I would do it with line out. So what to soup up an Echo, buy an Echo Dot for $30 and then spend a little more money on a speaker, a powered speaker. It could be a computer speaker. You know, this is where the sky's the limit. You could spend $1,000. Yeah. You could spend $50. That it gives you better audio. Connect the Echo. You put the Echo on top of it. Connect the Echo to that. Now that speaker is your Echo. And when you talk to the Echo, it'll come out of that speaker. And when you ask it for music, it'll come out of that beautiful sounding speaker.
That's the best. But can you make several of them all on the same wavelength?
Echo has party mode, so you can have.
I see.
You can create. What you do is you'll name all the Echoes, so you can have one in each room, and $30. That's not too expensive. And you can decide whether how expensive the speakers. They could be inexpensive, you know, Bluetooth speakers. You could be your stereo. Spread those around the house, and then you can name them each. Each one has a name: kitchen, living room, bedroom. And then you can create zones. You could say, I'm going to make a zone everywhere that is all of them. And then what you'll say is, Echo, let's listen to Christmas music everywhere, and all of the speakers will be playing the same song.
Oh, very cool.
I love that.
So that way I can use up a bunch of these speakers that aren't even plugged into anything right now.
That's the truth. A lot of us have Bluetooth speakers or powered computer speakers that are just sitting around. So that's an easy way to do this. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Very good idea. Well, thank you so much, sir.
That'll be fun. In fact, what a great, you know, she comes down for Christmas on Christmas morning. You've got Christmas, the pancakes coming, and you say, hey, honey, just do me a favor. Say this. Echo, play Christmas music everywhere and see what happens. Her eyes will
be very nice.
Have fun.
Well, enjoy the turkeys up there in Petaluma.
Yeah, we got a lot of them. Right. Have a great day. Thanks for waiting. I could tell you were sitting in the car waiting to get on the air. I appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, Google Home's great, too. We were just playing with the Google Home Max, which came out last week, the big speaker. You know, it's a fairly big speaker. Got two tweeters, two woofers. It sounds okay. It's probably the best of all of these. It doesn't sound as good as if you get a nice, you know, audio engine speaker and pair it to your Echo Dot. That's going to sound better. And practically, it's going to cost less as well. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More to come after this. I understand the reluctance about regulation. I do. But, and that's why I always say, well, do you think there should be some regulation in the world? Do you think the air, you know, air quality or water quality, should there be some regulation? If you do believe that there is a need for regulation, if you don't, then you're right. We shouldn't have a government. Let's just abandon the FCC. There shouldn't be any regulation. But if there should be some regulation, then it strikes me that you need to regulate these internet service providers because, like all businesses, they maximize profit, not your interests. Bruce, Riverside, California is next. Hi, Bruce. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo, thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. What can I do for you?
Okay. My wife, we haven't had a good phone. I really miss my Windows 8 phone. I loved that phone.
Yeah, I know a lot of people. We talked to somebody yesterday. I thought the Windows phone platform was great, but for a variety of reasons, it came too late. The carriers didn't support it. It just failed against Android and iOS, and they dominate.
It did. And as such, because there are no more, I'm contemplating getting a iPhone for my wife for the reason that she wants a really nice camera phone, but she saw that LG, we currently have Androids. I'm running an LG stylus, but she saw the LG V30.
Oh, that's a nice phone.
Is it?
All right. I'm going to tell you, though, the best camera phone, period, like not even close, is neither an iPhone nor an LG. It's, believe it or not, the Google Pixel 2 XL.
But as you know, on the T-Mobile platform, I don't think I can get that.
I use it on T-Mobile. You can, but you may not have to get it from T-Mobile. You might have to get it from Google and then just put a T-Mobile SIM in it. Works great on the T-Mobile platform.
Is still having issues with burn-in?
No, and I think that was a... I have a little problem with these quick turnaround reviews we're seeing lately. A lot of companies are providing short... The same thing happened with the iPhone X and the new iMac Pro. Apple didn't give people more than a day or two to review it, and there's such pressure on these tech blogs to push out reviews that you're seeing reviews that a phone that people use for a day or two. I prefer to buy it, which I did, and use it for a few months, and then you should ask me, well, how's it now? Zero burn-in. Google pushed. I think Google probably had a bad batch of LCDs in the beginning. For whatever reason, that's been fixed. They pushed out an update that lets you turn on a saturated mode that really looks more like what we expect an OLED to look at. It's not. It's less accurate. Google erred on the side of accuracy, but it looked washed out to me. I was used to Samsung's very bright, vivid colors. So they pushed out an update. They said, well, you want those, you can have them. And it's beautiful. It's a very nice screen. And incidentally, it's exactly the same screen as the LG V30.
Okay.
But
that's interesting.
The camera is a little bit better. And one reason is that Google put a separate chip, a processor in here that's dedicated to the camera. And it does an amazing job. That was only just turned on. Here's an example. The reviewers never got to see that chip in action. They didn't even know that chip existed. Google didn't tell them. And it wasn't turned on until the Android 8.1 update, which just came out last week. And I'm here to tell you, wow. Wow.
It's a Google Pixel 2.
Depends what size she wants. The 2 or the 2 XL. Both have that chip. Both have the same camera processing. The only difference in the XL, I think there might be a slight difference in the aperture on the XL, but basically the 2 or the 2 XL, depending on what size phone she wants.
Okay.
If she liked the V30, which I like a lot, by the way, that's a great phone, LG makes this Pixel 2 XL for Google. It's the same LG screen, and it's roughly the same size. So just go in and look at it.
Okay.
You can, don't tell them. Just go to an AT&T store. They have them there and look at it. And then go buy it from Google. I think there's $50 off right now as well if you buy it from Google.
That's sneaky. Okay.
Yeah, it's sneaky. I'm a sneaky guy.
I like that. All right, thanks, Leo.
As you probably could tell, I don't mind sticking it to AT&T. No, I'm a T-Mobile customer. If they don't have that phone in the store, then go look at it. You can go to a Best Buy. Go look at it somewhere. I do think it's important to hold and touch and look at a phone before you buy it. I'm not sure that T-Mobile doesn't have it. I'm just taking his word on that. But I'm a T-Mobile customer, and generally what I do is I buy unlocked phones, and I put the T-Mobile SIM in there, and it's fine. It works just fine. Target has a $250 gift card in the Pixel right now. Wow. Thank you, Scooter X. That's our chat mod. That at $250 off, that makes it a $700 phone. I think the Pixel 2 XL is fabulous. And really, there have been a number of products this year who have been, unfortunately, I think people have in their mind, they're not good products because the early reviews were bad. I think of the Essential phone, for instance, which had a bad camera app when it first came out. It crashed the phone. But they fixed it, and it's now quite a good phone for $400. It's beautiful. My favorite, though, if you're going to get an Android phone, I think my favorite really is the Pixel 2 XL. I cannot believe how good a camera this is. So much so that I'm thinking on my next vacation of not bringing my professional camera gear, but just bringing the Pixel 2 XL. Now, I'm going to be fair, the iPhone X is a great phone. It is a beautiful piece of hardware. It is probably the most beautiful phone I've ever seen. Really gorgeous. Beautiful screen. Camera is excellent. It's not as good as the Pixel 2 XL, but it's very close, and it does some things the Pixel 2 XL doesn't do. It has a zoom, has two lenses, things like that. But Google's done something very interesting with its Pixel phone. By putting in that secret hidden chip that just got turned on, they've really done something. 8888 ask Leo. By the way, yesterday we had that Windows phone person asking about Android, and today again, a number of people are pointing out you can make it be pretty Windows phony. Use the Microsoft launcher on Android. It's not my personal choice, but it is Microsoft's launcher, so it doesn't look a lot more like Windows Phone, does it? I don't think so. But it ties well into Cortana. You can put Cortana on there. You could put Microsoft apps on there, including Outlook, Microsoft Office. In fact, I think, as I remember, the Microsoft Store even sells what they call the Microsoft edition of the Samsung Galaxy S8.
Something went wrong. Try back soon.
Oh, I said her name. I'm sorry, Cortana. Let me just mute you for a moment. I can talk about you. We got to be careful, you know. That's always a problem on these shows. Earlier, somebody said the A word, right? Amazon Echo's trigger word. I hope that didn't trigger your Echo. I apologize if it did. Just for future reference, when you call the show, let's just call it the Echo and not use the A word. We should come up with names, though, for all of this stuff. You know, I can't. Siri, I said the name, Apple's voice assistant and Google's voice assistant, in theory, are trained to your voice, right? So I shouldn't be able to set off the Google thing or the Siri thing. But Amazon's Echo is just general. Anybody can talk to it. And I'm afraid we do set those off. So my mom, my 85-year-old mom, almost 85, she'll be 85 in a couple of weeks, calls it hoo-hoo. She says, hoo-hoo. So... The problem is there's no accepted name for it. So I don't want to say your Amazon hoo-hoo because I don't think that you would know what I'm talking about. Now, if you have changed the trigger word on your Amazon Echo to Echo, I'm sorry. There's nothing I can do. I'm not going to – I could, I guess, call it Amazon Voice Services forever. But that seems like a lot of words. I'm just going to call it the Echo, okay? 88, ask Leo. Well, everything we talk about links, some of those great gift ideas from Chris Marquardt, And a lot more will be on the website, techguylabs.com. That's free. There's no sign up. There's a search. But you can go directly to this episode, 1,449. We divide the site up into episodes, and then each episode up into hours, and each hour up into questions. So you can go right there to Chris's piece or to any particular question or any conversation we had and see the notes there. Respond to if you disagree, and I know there's a lot of conversation about net neutrality. You're more than welcome. Use the comment section. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Is this Vince Guaraldi? I think this is my favorite Christmas album. The Vince Guaraldi Peanuts Christmas music, the piano music, so beautiful. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I got a special shout out to Michael Cozio, our musical director, for doing some nice holiday music for us today. And of course to Kim Schaffer. You're going on vacation, right, Kim?
I am.
Where are you going?
I am going to Ireland.
What?
Yeah.
I'm so jealous.
Although I'm going to be jealous of you when I'm freezing in Ireland.
Yeah, I'm going to the warm place.
I'm going to want to be in the Caribbean where you are.
Yeah.
You're packing swimsuits and I'm packing parkas.
I figure I can pack pretty light. Flip-flops and swimsuits will be all on these.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, not the best time of year to go to Ireland, but it should be. It should be an amazing.
Are you going to be there on Christmas Day?
I'm going to be there New Year's Eve.
Oh,
I leave.
Holy cow!
Yeah, I leave there 2 days. Leave here 2 days after.
Oh,
Christmas,
you're going to have a wonderful time.
It'll be pretty amazing. I've never been over the pond, so.
Oh my goodness! No,
no.
Your passport in order?
Yep. Yep.
Have a wonderful trip.
I had to have the passport for the Bahamas earlier this year. So
have a wonderful time.
Yeah, you too. I'll miss not being here, but
what kind of money do I need for the British Virgin Islands? What do they? They use the pound sterling. What do they use? I'm gonna have to get some money.
Yeah, I just had to order my euros, so
yeah.
I have to go to the bank and pick them up.
Wow. Well, did you see the Star Wars? Are you going to see the Star Wars movie before you leave?
No, I'm not really interested. What? I'm not a Star Wars person. Oh. I did see two movies this week, but it wasn't Star Wars.
There are some good movies.
The Disaster Artist and Coco.
I hear Coco. That's the Pixar.
Was amazing. Yeah.
Did you cry?
I did. I'm a sucker.
I heard it was amazing. People with hard hearts cried in there. I hear a beautiful movie.
It is.
It's getting a little overshadowed by the Star Wars movie, unfortunately.
I've never been a Star Wars person, but
I hope people go see that. And The Disaster Artist sounds like a lot of fun.
It is.
James Franco
it's
plays
hilarious.
A guy who, in 2001, I think, he made a
2009.
Nine? Was that recent?
I think so, yeah.
Made a movie called The Room.
No, 2003? 2003.
It was a terrible movie.
It was a horrible movie.
And he's the disaster artist, and this is the story of that man and the movie he made. Have you seen The Room?
I did, and yes, I found it on YouTube because I would not spend a dime on that.
Oh, that's a good idea.
So I watched that, and then I actually sent it to Josh, who works here.
Didn't Josh go to a midnight show, though?
He was talking about going, and I sent him the link, so he didn't even have to leave his house.
Send me the
link. Movie is so bad. Have you seen it?
No. I didn't know it was on YouTube. Probably isn't anymore.
I'll send you the... No, it is. Send you the link.
Okay. Fun. Yeah. That'll be nice. We'll gather around the Christmas tree on Christmas Eve and watch the worst movie ever made.
Oh, it's the worst movie ever, but it's just comical. And then we'll be going down the hall saying, "Oh, hi, Mark." And you'll get that after you see it.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Oh, hi, Mark.
Oh, hi, Mark. Line two. Oh, hi, Steve. Upland, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Leo. As I told the screener, I have a Windows 10 machine that I'm running a virtual machine on and using Hyper-V. And I want to be able to access the USB ports on the host machine. And I've done a lot of web searches for it, and some suggest certain things, but then others, a guy says, it's not possible to do. So I was just wondering if you were able to access, and I don't want to access it for a disk USB. Like there are some solutions to if you have a thumb drive and you want to access that via USB on the host machine, there are ways to do it. But I want to access my iPod on the virtual machine through the host machine's USB ports.
Yeah, interesting. So I'm not as familiar with Hyper-V as I ought to be. And other virtualization, like, for instance, VMware, there are settings in the program that say, you can access the hardware USB ports. And in fact, if you're running VMware on Windows 10, you can plug something into USB, and VMware will say, okay, Who gets that? The virtualized operating system or the real operating system? And you can assign it. So I'm not sure why Microsoft doesn't do it on Hyper-V. That seems a little self-defeating. It means that Hyper-V isn't as good as the third-party programs. Terrapin in our chat room says it is not possible at Hyper-V, in Hyper-V. What Microsoft's intent is that you use remote desktop top protocol and pass the resource along that way.
Right.
That seems to be a very backward way of doing it. It may even be that Microsoft didn't want to compete with VMware. And so,
yeah, so VMware is not a Microsoft product.
No, it's third party. It's probably the best known virtualization. And it may even use the Hyper-V capabilities. That's part of the chip in the operating system. So it may be as efficient and as useful as Hyper-V, but with additional features. There's a one that's free you can try called VirtualBox. Oracle bought that.
I'm looking at I downloaded that too, and I've yet to install it only because...
what operating system are you running? You're running Windows 10 as your native.
Yeah, Windows 10 Pro, and then and Windows 10 on the hyper on the.
You're doing that more for security than anything else.
Well, it's actually kind of silly why I'm doing it, but I don't mind because I'm a computer geek and I like going down these knowledge paths. But I don't like iTunes 12 because of the interface. So I went back to the last version of iTunes that I liked with albums. You could see the albums, which was like 10.7.
Yeah.
And then it says, well, sorry, you can't use your iPod Nano on this. You have to upgrade. So it's like, no, I don't want to. I like the way it looks. And so I want to create a virtual machine, install the latest version of iTunes on that, and then be able to,
got it. And that way your native Windows 10, you can continue to run your antiquated version of iTunes.
So my native Windows 10, I'm running the old iTunes.
You're Mr. Workaround. So
Exactly.
So VMware, I believe, has a free trial version, or maybe it's just free version. And certainly VirtualBox is free. And both, to my knowledge and memory, I'll let you assign a hardware USB port to a virtualized operating system. So,
well, as I was talking to you about this, I'm looking online too, and the one says Hyper-V can't do this, and this is something that both VMware and VirtualBox can do.
There you go. There you go. See, a simple Google search, you wouldn't have had to be on hold for an hour.
Well, no.
I'm just glad Google confirms what the tech guy said. All right. That's
good. Exactly. Okay. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Happy holidays. I enjoy the story quite a bit, actually, because that's exactly what we all do, right? We all kind of have to mess with this stuff to get it to what we want. I think I wasted enough time talking about holidays and stuff that we just aren't going to have time for another call. I'm sorry, Ken. He wanted to ask about power line networking. And I have to say, when it first came out, it wasn't very good. But nowadays, absolutely, power line networking is a great choice. I use TP-Link power line networking endpoints, and they're fantastic. So, Ken, just a short answer to your question, yes, I like it. I want to have a little time because I want to wish you all a very happy holiday. We have, Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve coming up, so we're going to show you, have some pre-recorded shows so we can go on vacation, but we'll be back in the new year. All new questions, all new answers. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, have a great geek holiday. Goodbye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T, it stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.